so what we've worked out with the Chinchurupa Maji is this week we're focused mostly on altar-based services for these, and next week we'll be focusing on kitchen-based services. So it's good that everyone participates in this, because as we know, the whole idea is the community is centered around the service of Sri Sri Radha Vallabha. And if we can please Sri Sri Radha Vallabha, Jagannath Goddess of Lakmai and Sri Sri Gaurinitai, then we know, Yasmin Tusti Jagat Pushtak, that if Krishna is happy, the whole universe becomes happy. So we want to, you know, and the best way to learn, the best way to please Krishna is to learn how to please him. And it's not very difficult, because, you know, deity worship is not a thing that's there for speculation, because deity worship has very clearly been explained by our acharyas how to do it. Yeah? All the acharyas have they all give commentaries or where they talk about deity worship. Jiva Goswami has spoken about deity worship. Rupa Goswami has spoken about deity worship. Sanatana Goswami has spoken about deity worship. Sort of Prabhupada, etc., etc. The list just goes on. You know, Narad Muni, Krishna, they've all given, you know, explanations about deity worship. So it's not like there should be any reason to be unclear about it. So in this class, we're going to talk about the role and importance of deity worship. And so much time and energy is expended on deity worship, and sometimes it's actually questioned whether or not this is justified. So in today's class, we want to look at deity worship, what it is, and why we do it. And so the first thing we want to do is look at what is deity worship. Has anyone got some ideas on that? I'll just write a few ideas up on the board. I hope these are whiteboard markers. Any ideas? What is deity worship? Don't be shy. Opportunity to render Vasana Nini Vajra.
If Krishna's kind enough to come and perform, that we can learn how to please him.
Can I change a little bit?
What I was thinking was that it really is a learning experience.
So it appears in a form. How do you want to finish that?
To show us how to serve
Okay, it's kind of got smaller as it went along. What?
An opportunity through service to be purified.
Purification. I like that little easily. Yeah, more?
Develop a relationship with the Lord.
Relationship? Yeah, very good one. More? Got four, doing really well. Room of 30 people, we came up with four ideas.
God!
Preaching, yeah. I was actually reading a quote yesterday, which Srila Prabhupada said, if the deity worship is good, if the deity is worshipped gorgeously, it is very good preaching. More? It keeps us in a personal conception, or it helps us to develop a personal conception? This is a really nice whiteboard. It's got all these like really fine lines on it. Usually whiteboards, they don't have lines on it, so you kind of wind up running around in circles. Anything else?
It proves that the Lord has a form.
or some certainly will.
More. Come on, guys, all these intelligent, well educated men up the back here. No? Okay, so we've got a few good points there. We can work on that.
So there's many, many different things that are given there, and there's no end. I've got a few here with quotes from Srila Prabhupada, where Prabhupada talked about what deity worship means.
And certainly, it's definitely an opportunity to render personal service, because as we understand, Krishna's form is transcendental, but we're here, we're manifesting a material form. We have material senses, material eyes, all this kind of stuff, and we can't see transcendental. So Krishna, he appears in a transcendental form so we can have an exchange with him. Here's an interesting one. This is from a lecture. It's kind of in relation to that. So we cannot capture the greater than the greatest. That is not possible. Therefore, it is his kindness that he has become just to be handled by you. You see what Prabhupada is saying? He's so great, he's so vast, that he's come down into such a small form just to be handled by you. Just like we have the shalagram, so small that you can hold Krishna, God, in your hand. Or right hand, left hand. Don't hold the shalagram in your left hand. Is you can hold Krishna in your hand. Yeah? This is called Archamurti. Archavigraha. The deity worship means Archavigraha. Or another nice one, deity worship means following the rules and regulations precisely. Because we'll see, especially today, in the last two sessions, we're just discussing various aspects of purity. And you'll see how many different, well, some of the rules and regulations that are there. And Prabhupada was explaining deity worship to the devotees in the early days, and the devotees were saying, oh, Prabhupada, so many rules. And Prabhupada said, if I told you all the rules, you would faint. Right? A lot of rules of deity worship. There's a whole book, it's like about this thick, called Hari Bhakti Vilas. And all it is rules. Nothing but rules. Yeah. If you offer this kind of eggplant, you'll go to this kind of hell. If you offer this kind of eggplant, Krishna's happy. You know, you don't offer white eggplant. There are so many flowers and things like that. This is from a lecture that was given in Paris. Very nice. This deity worship means to train the neophyte devotees how to concentrate upon the form of Krishna, especially his lotus feet. That will make our life pacified always. Shanta, shanta. Pacified, peaceful. A nice quote by Prabhupada. And the deity worship means how to fix your mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. Always worship Krishna. Another one, deity worship means to be very, very clean. Or proper deity worship means to be clean, punctual, and nice offerings of food stuff. So you see that Prabhupada gives very simple understandings of what deity worship is about. It doesn't make it... Because we can look here, and the Rupa Goswami, he gives a really interesting... quoting from... definition of all archer. So this is Bhakti Rasmita Sindhu, and this is Rupa Goswami's definition. He says, archer is defined as offering of articles of worship with mantra after having performed preliminary purificatory activities such as Buddha Shuddhi and Nyas. So somewhat technical. We see that Srila Prabhupada, he kept everything quite simple. So he's giving a very simple definition of deity worship, essentially saying it means for neophyte devotees how to focus your mind upon the lotus feet of Krishna.
Okay, so that's just a bit of an introduction there.
So what I wanted to ask you, has anyone ever come across any negative attitudes towards deity worship? You know, like some people may say, thank you. You won't have to remember all this stuff, because I'm giving you handouts to take away as well, so you can, you know, read all stuff about deity worship, lots and lots of quotes from Prabhupada and stuff like that. Has anyone ever come across negative attitudes in relation to deity worship? You know, oh, it's idolatry, why are you wasting your money on worshipping these dolls? Why are you spending so much money, you could be feeding hungry people? What sort of attitudes have you come across?
Yes, exactly.
The loss, I'm going to give all of you, what ones have you come across? Why do you worship idols? Yeah. What else?
Psychological weakness in us that we've
got
to have a God that has a form.
Psychological weakness.
Yeah.
Lack of reciprocation.
So they think it's very one way out.
Sometimes people say there's a lot of rules, like, and if you go to the toilet, you can't go to the altar, so it's very strict and stuff. It should be more flexible.
Should be more flexible, huh?
Can somebody realize they definitely say people should go to the selfish, greedy, demanding God?
A selfish, demanding, greedy God, okay. What does he say amongst the master? Well, everything comes from me. I think he's got the right view. Any other ideas?
Deity
is just the means to the end. What's the impersonalist idea?
Find God.
Yeah, ultimately, you know, they become the deity or they become God, and they no longer need this. And actually, one time Prabhupada was in Mayapur, and a devotee was helping him up the bank of the Ganges. He'd be walking on the bank of the Ganges, or going to take water or something, and that the devotee helped Prabhupada up, and then Prabhupada hit his hand away. Well, he was shocked, like, what did I do? And then Prabhupada said, this is like the Mayavadi. They take the help of the guru, and when they achieve their realization, they discard them, they don't need them anymore. The same thing is, they worship the deity as long as they feel they need it, and when they feel they've become God, then they discard the worship. So it's a temporary thing for them. Other attitudes? Or other ideas?
Sometimes you feel that it's so difficult, especially with the stuff that you can offer to the Lord, and you know, especially that you need to be aware of what you can offer, what you can't, and you need preparation around it and all that stuff.
So that's a negative attitude towards the deity worship, you feel?
Yes,
okay.
Too much
more reverence. Okay. Well, I think I might have some here. I mean, over the years, I've compiled all sorts of Here's a good one. I get this one quite a lot. Deity worship is not the process of this age. Book distribution is more important. Sell the marble and print books. I always like to quote that one. It's interesting because sometimes you'll get these negative attitudes from outsiders, non-devotees, and sometimes you get negative attitudes from within ISKCON. You know, I sometimes see one senior Vaishnava who's sitting in Asan and he's giving class and he's saying that you're actually better off going out and doing book distribution or, you know, saying time rather than waving incense in front of the deities. You're saying things like this to the devotees. Not a good idea. Deity worship is for neophytes. Why offer such offerings to a statue? There are already so many temples. My needs are more important. This service is kind of interesting. Some people say, oh, this is only for the neophytes. And then the other one here, oh, this service is only for those who are very pure. You're doing very pure to worship. So you get them both spectrums. But what is the cause of these attitudes? Do you think? What do you think causes attitudes like this?
Ignorance.
Ignorance, exactly. People actually don't know what it is.
what it is they're doing, what it is we're doing with the worship of the deity. It's just, it's, you know, it's caused from lack of understanding, lack of knowledge.
Lack of knowledge.
Envy. Yeah. But essentially, it really comes from lack of knowledge. Because you actually understand what it is being done. You know, because many of these, like this envy and wanting to be the Lord, this is all lack of knowledge. Avidya. Because you're thinking that I am, you know, the Lord, I am this, I am that. But actually, we're not. We're actually serving Krishna. So, what is the actual proper understanding? Or how do we understand something? Because where does lack of knowledge come from?
Bad association.
They
didn't have exposure to the right.
I actually said a few minutes ago where it came from.
Ignorance?
Yeah, what's the Sanskrit word for ignorance?
Avidya.
Avidya means, what does avidya essentially mean? The essential understanding of avidya is that I am this body. Yeah? So how do we overcome avidya? Three things.
Guru, sadhu, shastra.
Yeah, exactly. Guru, sadhu, shastra. That's how we understand anything. And not just guru, not just sadhu, not just shastra, but these three together. They need to be there. We need to have the three of these together, because it's like, as Prabhupada would explain, it's the checks and balances system. Yeah? So by having these three together, we can understand clearly what it is, this process of deity worship. So any questions so far? If you have questions as we go along, please. Like, this first class is largely theoretical. There's not a lot of interaction. If you have questions, please ask.
Is that a report? Is it going to do it soon?
Okay. So, for this next section, look at why we worship the deity, what's the point of it? Because as we were discussing before, a lot of misconceptions about deity worship, but if we have knowledge, we can understand what deity worship is and why we do deity worship. So, you know, we've discussed basically what deity worship is. We've discussed a little bit about why we do it. Is it necessary to do deity worship, or are there better things we could do? Really, for making advancement of devotional service. Because, I know there's a lot of different ideas about what we could do in devotional service. The next few minutes, we want to look at, you know, why do we worship the deity? You know, what are the outcomes of it? What do you get from it? Yeah. And what we'll do is break into a few groups. So maybe, there's a lot of brahmacharis over this area here, so they can all be in one group. Yeah. And then the ladies, let's see. Are you four ladies okay to go with men in the front? Yeah? And if you three ladies can go with the back two rows of ladies, right? So the idea is, let's look at why we worship the deity. What are the outcomes, what are the benefits, right? Just make up your own lists. Yeah, and then we'll discuss it in a group. What do you think?
going on there, yeah?
Hello.
Huh?
Hello.
5 minutes, thank you. Finds it easier if you sit in the service, yeah?
Bruce, you will find a more conducive conversation if you sit in the service or face each other.
Thank you.
Just wanted to point you out, just wind up. Can you scoop it so that it's turned around? So, who would like to share some of their ideas in the class on why we do deity worship? Okay, so maybe give the first three.
Yep. First one is that we become purified. We can become purified by worshiping the deity.
Become purified, yeah.
Second one is that you can develop a personal conception.
Develop a personal conception, very good.
Develop a relationship with Krishna.
Develop a relationship with Krishna. Very important points, well done. Next group, who'd like to do the next 3 points?
Assist in chanting. Helps to control senses.
Yeah, very good.
Full engagement of the senses in service of Krishna.
Full engagement of the senses, yeah, that's very good. That's three?
Yes.
Okay, so next group.
It helps us not to become an atheist. It helps us to realize master-servant relationship.
Uh-huh.
It's a process of purification.
Process of purification, very good. So, some nice points. Of course, I'm sure you had 8 points. How many points did you have?
10.
12. Okay, so between you had, 20, 30 points. I've only got 21 on my list. But, I've got some here for you with references from the scriptures, just to sort of, so you can see what's going on. We'll see where these things come from. Interesting one from Nectar Devotion. Chapter 35, you probably said, well, how is this so? It says, to understand the Shastras. By worshipping the deity, you'll understand the Shastras. Yeah? So anyone who really wants to understand the scriptures, worship the deity and read the scriptures at the same time. Let's see. The development of conjugal love can be possible only to those who are already engaged in following the regular principles of devotional service, specifically in the worship of Radha and Krishna in the temple. Yeah? And that's a really important quote, because there are those who will say that by following the rules you can't develop Radha, you can't develop Prem. But Prabhupada is clearly saying here, you can only develop conjugal love through the process of following the rules and regulations of worshipping Radha and Krishna in the temple. So very, very important quotes there. Now, I've only got 20 of these, so how will we do this? Would you be interested in taking a list of all those who want more? Would you be alright with that? So we can hand these out, and anyone who wants a copy, this is just benefits of deity worship. If you want a copy of it, then just, if you ask, give your name to Simon, and then just pass it out and pass these out to Simon. And I've also got another interesting list here. Which is
all things related to deity worship from chapter 9 in the Nectar of Devotion. And, you know, going through Prabhupada's books, you'll see there are extensive references to deity worship, the benefits of deity worship, etc. I just, which has, one's called Benefits of Deity Worship, one's chapter 9, NOD chapter 9. Just ask the gym what you need. Okay. So that's an interesting exercise. That gets you to apply your mind to thinking about why it is you do deity worship, what sort of benefits you get from it. Yeah? Okay, so what about, what's the role of deity worship within the mission of Srila Prabhupada?
Establishment of temples.
Huh?
Establishment of temples,
yeah. Does anyone know the seven purposes of ISKCON?
The original one, or?
There's only one.
The original one is quite long.
Seven purposes, I've got
that
here.
I'm actually going to end this out too. This is written by Srila Prabhupada in 1966.
Who'd like to read that?
You want to read it?
Just read that
to
that.
Read one pass on.
Seven
Purposes of ISKCON. When Srila Prabhupada first registered ISKCON as a legal entity in New York in 1966, he gave the following seven purposes as its aims. Number one, to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large and to educate all people in the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalance of values in life and to achieve real unity and peace in the world.
Okay, so let's just look at that one there. Has that got anything to do with deity worship?
Spiritual
knowledge can cover everything if you want it to, but is there anything specifically about deity worship there? Did someone on the internet say something? The techniques of spiritual life is talking about rituals. Okay? This is, and to educate all people in the techniques of spiritual life. Okay?
To propagate Krishna consciousness, to propagate consciousness of Krishna as it is revealed in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam.
So anything there directly connected to spirit deity worship? To propagate a consciousness of Krishna? Yes, you could also say, yeah. Number three.
Bring the members of the society together, reach each other, hand names to Krishna and the Prime, and see, thus developing the idea within the members and the humanity at large that each soul is part and parcel of the quality of the Lord in Krishna.
So, anything there?
Vaishnava association.
Is that directly connected to deity worship?
The temple is a place for people to gather.
Creating a community,
yeah.
Like the
Vaishnava festivals. Yeah, yeah. I mean, in that sense, you know, the Sangha, because the Sangha is generally centered around the deity. Fourth one?
The deity can embrace the Sankirtan movement, congregation chanting of Prabhu's names of God, as revealed in the teachings of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
What do you think of that one?
Chanting.
Yeah. Same time. You know, congregational chanting. Where do we do most of our congregational chanting? In front of Radha Balava. Isn't it? Definitely, yeah. What about the fifth one?
To erect for members and for society at large a holy place for transcendental pastimes dedicated to the personality of Krishna.
What is that one? Huh?
Directly related. It's directly related.
Yeah, in what way?
Well, Krishna.
Yeah. For the members and for society at large, a holy place of transcendental pastimes dedicated to the personality of Krishna. Sounds like Prabhupada's talking about building temples. The sixth one?
To bring the members closer together for the purpose of teaching a simpler, more natural way of life.
How's that one connected? So how's that directly connected with this one and to the following point? To bring the members closer together for the purpose of teaching a simpler, more natural way of life.
Simple, natural way of life is Krishna, not
trying
to bring
ourselves. Okay. Yeah, so by serving Krishna, you know, according to the directions given by the acharyas, then we develop a simpler way of life. Is that essentially what you're saying?
Yeah.
And number seven.
With a view toward achieving the aforementioned purposes, to publish and distribute periodicals, books and other writings.
How's that more connected?
When the Sankirtan is coming to the community,
yeah, but how is this one directly connected to deity worship?
The publishing of books is a major preaching tool. Through preaching, we learn about Krishna. And in learning about Krishna, you only meet Krishna. You come to temples to see him.
Yeah, it's certainly connected, but it's not like directly connected,
yeah.
I don't think. I think probably of all of them, this is the only one that's not directly connected to deity worship. I mean, they're all connected in one way or another because the whole society, you know, it's an absolute thing. It's all connected to Krishna in one way or another. But this one, at least to my perception, which is not an absolute perception, but that one doesn't appear to be directly connected to deity worship. Okay, so that's interesting. What I'm trying to do here is just show you in all the different ways how deity worship is an important part of the practices of Krishna consciousness and how it's integral to the practices of ISKCON. Okay. Does anyone know the five principal activities of devotional service? Do you know the verse? Okay, so, right, so, Bhagavatam? Yeah. Huh? Yeah, well, that would have to be there, doesn't it? What's the most important, the first one?
Chanting.
No, Manaji already said chanting.
Srinivasan.
You already said Bhagavatam too. And residing in a holy place and producing deity worship. Sadhu Sangha, Nama Kirtan, Bhagavat Shravan, Mathura Vasa, Sri Bhattira Shalayasavan. This is spoken by Lord Chaitanya. Sadhu Sangha, associate with devotees. Sadhu Sangha, Nama Kirtan, chant the holy name. Bhagavat Shravan, you study the Bhagavatam. Mathura Vasa, Vasa means like a resident, become a resident of the Dharma. Yeah? And Srimatira Shalya Savan, you worship the deity with faith and veneration. Lord Chaitanya gives these as the five most important activities of devotional service. And it's interesting, he says here, there's another verse here quoted from that same section. You'll see by my version has so many corrections and notes and stuff like that and all over the place. We're actually working on producing a new. Lots and lots of corrections on it. It's, Lord Chaitanya says, this is from Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 22:133. The power of these five principles is very wonderful and difficult to reconcile. Even without faith in them, a person who is offenseless can experience dormant love of Krishna simply by being a little connected with them. Difficult to reconcile. You can't really understand how these things are working. And even if you don't have faith in deity worship or chanting a holy name or these different activities, if you're not committing offenses, you will get benefit. It's saying here that you can experience dormant love of Krishna simply by being a little connected with them. Okay? So a very, very powerful process of deity worship and chanting and these other activities. Okay. Where are we up to now? My head's a bit disorganized today. I was like so scrambled after yesterday. It's the sickest I've been in about 40 years. Who's got that handout from chapter 9? Can I just grab yours from here? So, for those of you who've got this or who want to get a copy, please, you know, if you don't have a copy, give your name to Simon and I'll put these up and have them ready tomorrow. You'll see in here, there's all these different about how all the different facets of deity worship and you know all things that connect with deity worship affect us in our lives, just like tilak and tulsi beads, the benefit of accepting the flower remnants, the deities, dancing before the deity, bowing down in honor of the deity, standing up to receive the Lord. And you go through this holistic, there's all these different benefits of deity worship, rendering service to the Lord, singing, reciting notable prayers, partaking prasad, drinking charamrita, smelling incense and flowers. So many nice things are there. Touching the deity, seeing the deity, observing arti and celebrations of the Lord. So, when you get time, read through that. Some very interesting stuff. So, what's the main point behind deity worship, do you think? All this stuff, we've discussed all the benefits of deity worship. What is deity worship? We briefly looked at negative attitudes and what causes the negative attitudes. Why we worship deity or the benefits of deity worship, right? And look at the role of deity worship within ISKCON and the society, Srila Prabhupada's movement and stuff. Ultimately, what are we getting to here?
Krishna.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, how?
Glory Krishna.
Glorify Krishna.
Please Krishna.
Please Krishna. But we're saying this Krishna, that Krishna, what Krishna, what are we talking about? Okay, so we'll start off with Krishna, right? What are we getting at here? Really? What are we getting at?
Krishna is a person.
Ah, very good. Top of the class. Krishna is a person. If you can develop this attitude, you're not going to have any problem with the rules and regulations of deity worship. You just always accept Krishna is a person. If you accept that Krishna is a person, are you going to talk in front of him? Because he's the supreme person. It's not like he's my friend next door. He's the supreme personality of Godhead. If you accept Krishna as a person, are you going to burn his offering?
No.
Exactly. Are you going to bring it 5 minutes late? We just have to accept that Krishna is a person, and that will inspire us to do everything correctly. So this is the essential point we're trying to get at, and in all our discussions we'll try to remember this, that Krishna is a person. This is just called workbook, a student workbook, I guess. So anyone who wants this. Does everyone plan on coming tomorrow?
It's going to be different tomorrow, isn't it?
It's not
interesting.
It's getting worse. A completely different class, yeah. Three different classes. Is anyone not going to come tomorrow? So on the front page of this, there's something that's called the Principles of Deity Worship. Now this was put together in the late 90s. I wrote emails to all the head pujaris I knew at the time, and asked them what they thought were the 10 most important things in deity worship. And I got back their answers and then just took what was the most common. So obviously, as you can guess, what the top would be. Cleanliness and punctuality. Prabhupada emphasized these two things above anything else. And you'll see that on each one of these, I've written a bit of an explanation. Okay? So we've got cleanliness and punctuality, exemplary character and behavior. It's very important for the vajrayi to exhibit exemplary character and behavior. Then training and education, also very important. Many of the Pujaris thought this was a very important part of deity worship. Sound spiritual practices. There's a really nice quote in here from Srila Prabhupada. And I think it's important for all Pujaris to appreciate. This is from a class that should have called by David Meyer. Because interesting enough, he gave almost exactly the same class in Vrindavan. This was recorded in 29th of September 1974. But if we're not interested in hearing and speaking, then it will be the same thing. Simply formula, that's all, and gradually it will be stopped. Unless there is life of Shravanam Kirtanam, these big buildings, temples will become burden. So if we want to create a burden for the future, where we might give up this hearing and chanting and sleep very nicely, it will be a burden. Galadraha, not Sri Vigraha, but Galadraha. Sri Vigraha means worshipful deity. So if we give up this Shravanam Kirtanam, Vishnu, then it will be thought that our Guru Maharaj is given as a burden around the neck. Kalagraha, this is the danger. So it must be very alert in this Shravan Kirtanam. Otherwise, all this labor will be futile. This building will only be a nest for the doves and pigeons. This is the danger. So Prabhupada is highlighting there that if we don't have good sadhana, particularly hearing and chanting, then it just becomes a burden. And what happens is if we just see that the deity, we don't see the person, the personality of the deity, we just see this is a burden that the Guru has given me. And in the other lecture you gave in Vrindavan, he said, then we'll think this old man has simply given me a burden. So you actually wind up criticizing the Guru because we don't have this life. Because that's where our life comes from, is our sadhana. Yeah? So sound spiritual practice is very important. Preaching spirit, also very important. You know, go out and tell people about these. consistency with Srila Prabhupada's instructions, cultivating the mode of goodness, a very important aspect of deity worship. The deity is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, harmony with other services. It's not that Pujari should be thinking my service is the best. All services are absolute from the perspective of Krishna. And balanced adheres to rules, adherence to rules and regulations. So you'll see there's an explanation of all these different ones on the subsequent two pages. There's also an article there from the after that from the Pancharatra Pradeep, which you may find interesting. And at the back you'll see Prabhupada's seven purposes of this one. Okay, so what I'd like to do now, is everyone situated where they can actually see the 10 principles of deity worship? Anyone else? Everyone else can see a copy of this? The ladies can see? Can I take one from here somewhere and pass it back? I got some. Now, what I'd like to do is just look through this list, right, and see which ones of these you come to use the word resonate with, you know, which one you think is important to you and how it's important to you. Yeah? Or how you can sort of, you know, use this in your emotional service. How can it help you improve your spiritual life? Or, maybe not so much you, how can it help the community to improve? Just reflect a little bit on it and think about that. So any really interesting ones you'd like to share with the whole class? No? Anyone like to share?
Can I share for a duty?
Yeah. Is that reflecting the principles of deity worship? Yeah, no, that's very good. Everyone hear that?
No.
A little loud.
You're looking at principle 8, that the deity is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Mother Deity is saying that through learning the deity, she can really feel that she is Krishna's servant, and it's very difficult otherwise.
Very good. Really.
Of the 10 points, the one which resonates with me is training and education. Need for a systematic way of acquiring the skills and knowledge to do deity worship is very important for me. I think even this course, if the emphasis is more on doing, it will help of how exactly to do.
Yeah.
That will be a very big help.
There will be some of that. But if you want to get like a full training, then you have to come to Mayapur. There's only we've got like 3 classes today, 3 classes tomorrow, 6 classes next week. There's 12 classes. You can't really cover a lot. In Mayapur we do about 100. And actually, we've gone up 1 month now, so we've got 200 classes. There's quite a difference, you know, between 12 classes and 200 classes. Yeah, but it covers a lot more in Mayapur too. Anyone else? Thanks, sir.
I want to do 3 as well, but from a different angle. Training,
yeah.
Education, but from the angle of what you're saying, not just training in terms of skills, like sadhana, reading, etc., because that's where you keep the fire of love of God. Love.
Yeah.
And if you, and I'm linking up 3 with, I couldn't find it, but I kind of forced it in with number 9, harmony of other services. The tendency to take the jari and use them all over the show, So that sadhana suffers, reading education suffers, ultimately, and that's continued on a long-term basis,
right.
Quality of service was generally declined, and it's one of the critical services in the temple, and you have high mortality rates among the Pujaris.
So, which one you're looking at?
Three and nine.
So, how could these principles be used then to improve your spiritual life or improve the spirituality of the community?
I think that Pujaris as a category have to be treated very carefully. In the sense, don't overstress them, stimulate them with constant reading and whatever, insert training, and keep, you know, send them off to my pool.
Yeah, send them my pool, definitely. Right.
Yay! Send them off to my pool, give them time.
From November to March every year.
Very nice. Give them time off for good sadhana and stuff like that.
You usually get time off for good behavior, but you can give time off for good sadhana. Right? Anyone else?
I think the cleanliness and punctuality will provide always regulate the internal and external cleanliness.
Yeah.
That will reflect on our behavior.
Yeah.
And your exemplary behavior will attract more Vaishnavas and
create
a more peaceful society and community.
Yeah, no, it's very, very important. Cleanliness and punctuality just helps right across the board. Okay, so what we'll do now is just have a 5-minute break. Does anyone know what the nature of Krishna is? There's a really nice verse in the Gita that says, Pavitram Paramam Bhavam. Okay? Everyone knows that verse? Was it 10.11? 10.11, I think it is. It's not a wood but it's in the Sea Slogans. What does that mean? Pavitram Paramam Bhavam.
The supreme
mood, pavitra means pure. And actually, I was listening to a class a while ago. Prabhupada says, paramam, this is extreme. So Prabhupada's saying it means the extreme pure. Now, Krishna's nature is the supreme pure. And in order for us to approach the Supreme Pure, what do we need to do? Purify? No, we need to become pure. And there's actually a lecture, I was
like lying down there, sort of in my delirium last night, and I was thinking, oh, I don't think that quote out is a really good quote. You know?
There's a lecture Prabhupada gave when he installed the deities in Small Beers, Rukmini Dwarkanath in 1968 in Los Angeles, and he's talking about how, you know, he says it's just like fire. If you go in the fire and your nature is not fire, you become burned. And so, you know, someone who has a fiery body can go in the fire and it's not a problem. So in the same way, we cannot associate with Krishna unless we also have that, you know, pure nature. So when we talk about purity, what do we mean by purity? Well, cleanliness. Say cleanliness. Maybe it's a bit easier to understand. What do you mean when we talk about cleanliness? Okay, so maybe write a few of these down. So I'll just put external and internal. This marker's not very good. Yeah? More? That's it? Just external and internal? It kind of covers everything, but let's get some specific ideas. What do we mean when we say cleanliness?
Consciousness aligned to the
soul. That's an interesting one. It comes from an educated man. Consciousness aligned to the service. Yeah? Okay. More? I mean, you can actually come up with lots and lots and lots of different things about cleanliness.
Exemplary behavior?
Talking about cleanliness. Okay, I'll give a practical example, right?
Just to sort of make your heads work on top of it. What about that?
Would you say that was clean?
One time.
So give me a simple definition of that.
Clean.
No, I know it's an arsenic.
You remove the dirt from the impurities and the tally.
Okay, so free from dirt.
Yes.
Good, that's what I want to hear.
Free
from dirt. Now isn't that a really simple definition? Yeah? What else is it free from?
Can you smell anything?
Let me smell. You can't smell anything either. Right? So, free from odour. Specifically bad odour.
Free from any contamination.
Yeah, free from contamination. There are all sorts of colours here. Unfortunately, I didn't have time to clean them all.
This is a bit of a job. I didn't actually have time to clean all the arsenic spirits, but this is the same thing without cleansing. And you can see, not exactly so clean. One problem with copper is it tarnishes really fast. Yeah, so. Okay, what else? We've got five. No? Okay, we'll leave it at that. That's five good points there. Alright. So, I mean, essentially we're looking at free from dirt, free from odor, ultimately free from contamination. This means pure. And, you know, stains. You know, you can also add here dirt / stains. Because if something's stained, yeah, especially in relation to cloth, cloth is considered unclean if it has stains. If it has odour or it has holes. Cloth with holes in it is considered, you know, if it's been eaten by insects or anything like that, considered unclean and can't be used. Okay, so there's some ideas. Now,
pin?
Huh?
The pin is totally sorry.
Put a hole in it then, hasn't it?
What about any holes which come by lining?
Huh?
Any holes which are come by lining?
A hole is a hole.
Yeah?
Hole is a hole. Yeah? Well, I mean, like, you know, sometimes you buy cloth and by the mercy of India it comes with holes in it, you know? Free holes and free stains. Everything in India is like that. Okay, so what do we mean when we talk about external cleanliness?
Body, clothes.
So, okay, so external, right? We've got this one here. We're talking about body, clothes. Merle says paraphernalia. You know what the Sanskrit word is for paraphernalia, Merle? Anyone know the Sanskrit word for paraphernalia? What's the Sanskrit word? You do so. Dravya. Yeah? Dravya means all of these things. Yeah? Just all the external types of things. Yeah, so like, basically it relates to everything external, everything we're using in the service of the deity needs to be clean. Yeah? And what about internal? What are we talking about when we talk about internal?
Sadhana,
that would assist the internal cleanliness. I don't know if we can say mind, thoughts. What's one word we can use for this? Sanskrit word? A Sanskrit word? Anatta is a Sanskrit word, but it's got heart, mind, consciousness. There's one word that means the same three things. Chitta. Yeah? It means the same three things because it's a concept. In Sanskrit, it's the same thing. Because, like we talk, saying clean heart. Does that mean you can pull this organ out and give it a scrub and put it back in? Because that's just an organ. The word heart just relates to an organ. But when we talk about a clean heart, it's referring to our consciousness. Yeah? So it's the same thing. It means the consciousness, the chitta. So this is all the external things, the things that are used in the service of the Lord, the dravya, the body, the clothes, the paraphernalia, etc., etc., like that, the place,
where you do the worship, all these types of things need to be clean. Like, say, for instance, here would not be a suitable place to do worship. Why?
Carpet.
Yeah, carpet. How can it possibly be clean with carpet? You know, it's like you pull this stuff up and see how much rubbish is under it. So if you want to keep your house clean, then living in a house with carpet is not the best environment. But in a cold place like Melbourne, what can you do? You're going to freeze to death if you, you know. So things like that. Okay, so that's, we've got some ideas of cleanliness there. What's the other important thing we're talking about before? Punctuality. What do we mean by punctuality? Huh? Being on time. What does that mean?
Don't let
him wait. What does that mean? Does it mean like we can turn up? You know, like, well, different people have different ideas. I was reading something recently about this operating room where the different staff had different ideas of what on time was, and like some members were thinking that you're being on time meant like, you know, they're supposed to start at 9:30, so it meant that they were in the OR, scrubbed up, already kitted out, ready to start at 9:30. And others thought that meant being there at 9:30, getting there at 9:30, starting to scrub up and kit themselves out into the room, so they were like, you know, 5-10 minutes later. Different people have different ideas. What do we mean when we say punctual?
Punctual.
I think
the temple,
say,
the public worship,
they're
punctual.
And
other places, it can be according to
their rules. Mm-hmm. But what does it mean to be
punctual?
What do we mean to be punctual? After the agreed time. To follow the clock, that it's Krishna expects a particular service to be performed to him. Then everything is geared around the delivery of that service at the time Krishna is expecting it. So it goes as opposed to beauty, whatever, offered at 1:12, whatever it is, 40, then 12:40 on the dot, the door is opening and then Krishna is
expecting
it. Yeah.
Okay. No?
Must one is the cut point. They need to go on clock and then open on the time. Because they have to, when they come, it takes time to
exist. So you're saying you should be standing there ready to serve at the specified time?
Yes.
Okay. Any other ideas? I mean, I find it an interesting discussion because I always wondered, what did the Goswamis do? They didn't have timepieces back in those days. Always wondered about that, you know, how they actually determined whether the offerings, you know, what the exact timing was for the offerings and stuff. I think...
Some
vidis there. Yeah, vidis there, but how do they tell what time is? They don't have clocks.
But in Indian religious, people know the times different here, the sun rises, sun sets, etc.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it would take a few minutes.
Yeah,
few
minutes, but they do.
They used to have a piece of string hanging down, wherever the shadow was, they don't know what time of day it was, but, you know, it would take a few minutes. And lastly, I think that, like, the strictness of timing has become sort of quite prevalent within ISKCON. And I know that, you know, like, there are stories, I don't remember the precise story, but, you know, like, one time Prabhupada woke up his servant in the middle of the night and said, did you hear that? He was in Vrindavan. There's no problem. What am I supposed to hear? He said, yes, exactly. He didn't ring the bell. It was like, the Chokhidar was supposed to ring the bell on the hour, every hour, and he didn't ring the bell. You know, it was like a few seconds after it was supposed to happen. And then another time in Vrindavan, they were like 2 minutes late opening for darshan. Oh, I was annoying. You know, he said, why can't they open on time? You know, so, you know, like what you find is different places are going to have different standards as to what is good, you know, exact punctuality. But generally speaking, if it says the offering is 12:40, that means the offering is, you know, put the plate down and when the clock's 12:40, then you make the offering.
some places, you know, say to the second, some places don't. Here, it's considered it should be to the second. Whereas other places you go, they may not be so strict about the time. But then what I always encourage devotees to do is to worship according to where you are. You know, when in Rome, do like the Romans do. Also, because this is a Melbourne temple, they have specific standards here. Follow those standards. Each temple has their own. And there's an interesting, there's a a purport in, I can't remember what verse, in purport, I think from memory it's in the fourth canto. And then Srila Prabhupada, he's saying in the purport that that the worship must be done according to time, place and available conveniences. He's saying, you know, sometimes the people from India, they're criticizing the worship and just saying this has not been done, that has not been done. You know, but he's saying, you know, we are, you know, pushing on this deity worship around the world, and the worship has to be done according to time, place and available conveniences. So we see, you know, in places, different places they do it differently. Okay, so essentially by punctuality we mean being on time, and as Bhakti Maharaj was saying, not keeping Krishna waiting. Because we keep in mind, we are serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we're serving him in, what's the mood we're serving him in? Or reverence?
Aishwarya.
There are all these such things. King. We're serving him like he's the king. Yeah? And is there any question of anyone sort of keeping the king waiting? Huh? Off with his head. You know what they used to do in the old days? Someone, there was this Aurangzeb, he was so heavy. Anyone did anything wrong, execution on the spot. Very, very heavy. So, when we're punctual, what message do we send?
We care.
We care. What else do we send?
Strength.
What else? What other message do we send?
You take
the general public. But, okay, I'll put it another way. If I make an appointment with you, and I turn up on time, what am I telling you?
You're interested.
I'm interested in you. What else?
Giving importance.
Yeah, it's important to me. So if someone's consistently late in deity worship, what message are they sending?
Unimportant.
I got better things to do.
Yeah? And that also include being early. You sort of say you do an offering, you just want to get it done because it's done when you're already, you want to offer it when you're already like a few minutes early. So then say if you're in the kitchen or something, you just want to get out of the kitchen, or you just want to do your service and leave.
No, that's a very good point. That's a very good point. Also being early and finishing early. I've seen pujaris offering full aartis in 7 minutes just because they want to go. And it looks kind of like, you know, it's so fast the way they whiz around, you know. They go through all the circles. I mean, why even bother with circles if that should move, you know. But yeah, that's also a good point, is trying to get things done as quick as possible. You know, I'm here now, so I'm doing it. It's also, you know, I've got more important things to do. What else? What other message would you possibly be sending?
Sincerely, be sincere.
Hmm?
The fact that we are punctual, we are trying to be sincere.
And but if we're not punctual?
Lack of enthusiasm?
Lack of sincerity.
Lack of sincerity?
Commitment.
Lack of commitment? All these things. And how's that going to affect us?
Not getting benefit from the service.
Definitely not going to get any much benefit from the service. You'll get some benefit, but you'll minimize the benefit.
If we are convinced that Krishna is supreme, then we go all out to do our best for him in every way.
Well, that's also a good point, and that leads us into the next thing. It's like, if we find ourselves being consistently late, and as Mudge is saying, if we actually all out, you know, we accept Krishna as a person and we want to please him, we're working hard. You know, it's like, if we're sincere in our service and we make a mistake, it's not considered an aparadha because of the sincerity. It becomes an aparadha when we don't care. If we're genuinely trying to please Krishna, Bhavagrahijanadana, he accepts the sincerity of the service. Okay? So if we're sincere in our service and we find ourselves often late, what do we do about that? Take shelter of the holy name. I don't think that was really what I was looking for. Good idea, but I don't think it's going to solve the problem. We're going to solve the problem. How are we going to solve the problem?
That's the problem.
Seek guidance and time management. Huh? Seek guidance and time management. Yeah. Exactly. Seek guidance and time management. What's another way of wording that?
Start earlier.
Start earlier. Really simple. Start earlier. Because you know how long, you know, it takes you a certain amount of time, you know, to do something. So just start a little bit earlier. Oh yeah, it's not, deity worship's not rocket science, as they say. It's very simple stuff. It just takes a bit of sincerity, a little bit of knowledge, and that's basically it. There's two types of, or two aspects of punctuality. Anyone aware of those? There's what's called nitya and naimittika. So nitya means regular or daily regular service, and naimittika refers to festivals and things like that. And with the nitya seva, it generally goes on strictly according to time. Naimittika seva goes on according to tithi, which means the auspicious day, etc. like that. And the often you'll find with naimittika seva, it can vary from year to year, not necessarily every result at the same time every year and things like that. And even you find sometimes when there's big festivals, because of the change in environment and stuff like that, the nitya seva varies in time. You know, the offerings may be a little bit different in time and stuff like that. You know, if you're cooking more preps and stuff, it's not necessarily so long if the offerings are different times. Of course, we never make them on time, but if because the Abhishek goes on longer or something like that, because it's, you know, whatever, then it's not such a problem. Okay. What about positive and negative aspects of cleanliness and punctuality? Can anyone think of some? What's some positive aspects of cleanliness and punctuality?
Might want to fill these up.
Okay. Let's see if we get more than 5 each.
It gets you in the right frame of mind to do the thing.
So consciousness, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? We've got one. Come on, get a few more out. Let's see. What's some positive points of being clean and punctual?
Being punctual is in the mode of goodness, it means that the process will go
smoothly. So, cultivate goodness, yeah? More?
There's less anxiety.
Less anxiety?
If you're on pain.
Right? Some more?
If you're not keen on it, you're late, and Krishna might not accept the service.
I just put a K here. Yeah?
Positive, you will never go wrong.
Huh? Positive, you will never go wrong.
Never go wrong? Okay.
It's an offense.
Maybe. Offense. Actually many positive points, and there's quite a lot of negative points also. I'm not sure if I've got a list on that.
Setting a good example.
This is a very good point, Manaji, very good point. It's kind of hard, I'm not sure which one is which, because this is a black one, it's got blue lead, and this is a green one, it's got a red lead. And that relates back to our, remember that relates back to our principles of deity worship?
Exemplary
character. You know, pujaris must always be setting a good example for others to follow. You know, because you're up there, you're on the stage next to the star performer. You know, everyone's looking at Krishna, but they also see the pujari. If the pujari is doing some nonsense, then everyone's going to notice that. And it gives the whole thing a bad impression, you know, because they're seeing the pujaris behaving in a bad way. Some more positive points of cleanliness, punctuality.
Reinforces servitorship.
Yeah, that's a good point. I've got to think of spelling. Normally I don't have to think about spelling. It was like when I was typing on the computer, I'm like thinking, how am I supposed to spell this? It's like normally the words just flow, but a bit hard today. Okay, what else?
Bad preaching.
Bad preaching, it is indeed. There's so many other things you could think of, positive points of cleanliness and punctuality, such things as pleases Prabhupada, pleases Krishna, so many things like this, obviously displeasing. I may have some more here.
Usually what I do is make up these huge big lists of things. Just to give you an idea. Helps cultivate the mode of goodness. We've got that one there. If you can please, this is a nice one. This is from a letter. If you can please the deity by your sincere service, then your temple will flourish. Krishna will surely bless you. Other temple activities will flourish. Another letter. Helps us to become constantly absorbed in thought of Radha and Krishna. These ones are all on punctuality. One becomes relieved of all material anxiety due to material sense agitation. Prabhupada also says you will advance very quickly due to the perfectional stage of Krishna consciousness. Now, this is a nice one. I'm sure everyone will relate to this. It's from a letter in 1970. You'll achieve the full blessings of Srimati Radharani. Mm-hmm. Yeah? It's also connected with discipline because it's regulation. Help you conquer the mind, keep the senses engaged like iron in the fire. It is good for health. In regulated life only can one understand transcendental knowledge. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.25.1 for a report. Any pundits of the Gita here? 6.17. One who's regulated in the habits of eating, sleeping, recreation, and work can mitigate all material pains by practice of the yoga system. Very important verse. Then cleanliness. This is a nice one. The more you keep
the deity room and Parapandali clean, the more your heart becomes cleansed from dirty things. So it's just cleansing your heart. And this next quote is probably my favourite quote from Srila Prabhupada in deity worship. The idea is summit cleanliness. That will satisfy Krishna. Do you know what I mean by summit? Pretty simple thing, right?
You have a mountain, right? And the mountain, you know, there may be all sorts of different shapes there, but it goes up like that, and it's got this point on the top. But there's a little point up here, that's called the summit. Why is it called the summit?
Highest point.
Yeah, because you can't go any higher. So when you've got something so clean that you can't make it any cleaner, that'll satisfy Krishna. Yeah? If you can make it cleaner, it's not going to satisfy Krishna. Yeah, so that's an important point. Prabhupada wrote that letter to Shalabhati. Shalabhati was the first person that Prabhupada trained in deity worship. It is one of the items that constitute a state of knowledge, Bhagavad Gita 13:18-12. And in that verse, in the purport there, Prabhupada says that cleanliness is essential for making spiritual advancement. Yeah? If we're not clean, we're blocking our spiritual advancement. One of the four pillars of religion. One of the two main qualities of Brahma. What's the other one? Truthfulness, yeah. Svacham and Arjivam. Helps cultivate the mode of goodness, good for health and hygiene, prepares one to enter Vaikuntha. Many, many good points there. Okay. Now what we want to do now is just... So... oh, Krishna. So, these different points here, if we look at it on the face of it, is just by being clean and punctual, is that going to help us go back to Godhead? Or, what I could do, do I have these interesting quotes? I have some really far out quotes here somewhere, just let me find them for you. So, as we were saying, from 13:18-12, Prabhupada says, cleanliness is essential for making advancement in spiritual life. There are two types of cleanliness, external and internal. And then that's from Bhagavad Gita. Then the Srimad Bhagavatam, he says, because the conditioned souls are influenced by material nature, they can see only the actions and reactions of material nature, but not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One must purify himself internally and externally. Apipitro pavitro va sarvastam pito viva yasmanet pundidikaksha sarvaya vyakara suchi. To keep ourselves externally clean, we should bathe three times daily. And for internal cleanliness, we must cleanse the heart by chanting Hare Krishna mantra. The members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement must always follow this principle, Vaya Vyankara Suchi. Then one day it will be possible to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. So, does that mean simply by being clean we're going to see Krishna? Huh? A bit more to than that, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, I can show you so many clean places in this world. Yeah, I mean, it never ceased to amaze me when I used to spend a lot of time in London. You walk through the West End and you see all the theatres there. The fronts of the theatres were sparkling clean. You been there, Stoker?
Yeah, all like
sparkling clean, so shiny. So does that go to attract Krishna? And so many places in this world like that, they're sparkling and clean. Is that going to attract Krishna? So what's going to attract Krishna?
Devotion.
Okay, that's another interesting point. Devotion. There's an interesting story. And it kind of, it's like, sometimes we hear that people say, well, it's all about bhakti. And you may sit, they'll say, oh, so-and-so's got bhakti, but you look at the person, they're not particularly clean. When Prabhupada,
from memory, it was 75 or 76 or 77, the last Kumbh Mela that Prabhupada attended. And he was there with disciples. And this is a story, I think Jamuna told this story. Prabhupada pointed out to the yogi, he said, "You see this yogi over here?" And they all looked over. He said, "See his water pot." It was sparkling clean. The Prabhupada said, "You see how clean his water pot is? This means his heart is clean." So the point being, it's like, yeah, the externality of it's important. But we need to go through the externality of it. Why?
Reflects the internal.
Huh?
Reflects the internal.
Reflects the internal, or? It cleanses the internal. Yeah? And see, like that gets back to what we were talking about internal and external before. You can't separate them. You can't, one doesn't necessarily cause the other. One does cause the other. And one is a sign of the other. They're interconnected. You can't separate internal and external. If a person is always externally cleaning, then they're going to become internally clean. And when a person is internally clean, they will be always externally cleaning. There's no separation between the two.
isn't that only if you are doing it for Krishna? Because I know a lot of people are just saying, well, you say Western theatres are.
Yeah, but that's what I'm talking about here. It's only if you're doing it for Krishna, it's going to be purifying.
This is like the Tatastha Lakshana, but the Swarup Lakshana has to be there, that we are doing it for Krishna.
Yeah, exactly. It's only when you do something for Krishna that it purifies the heart. It doesn't matter what activity it is. It's only by doing it for Krishna that purifies the heart. And you can do any. You can take any of these activities, like the Maya body, Zajra deity worship, and it doesn't purify their heart at all. It contaminates their heart. Because why? They think they're God. So by doing an activity for Krishna, it purifies the heart. So, you know, by actively, the more actively we engage ourselves in the purificatory process of deity worship and devotional service in general, the more our heart becomes purified. And the more our heart becomes purified, the more externally manifest this purity becomes. So, if, you know, it's not a means, not that we're using it as a means to judge people, but you can see that when a person is externally very unclean, this is generally an indication of what's going on inside. And Prabhupada sometimes say that the face is the indicator of the mind. And so these external things do give an indication. Okay, so any questions on any of that? Okay, so what we want to do now is we have a number. Lots of handouts today. I hope you don't read them all.
Drinking a sip of water from the right hand, they purify their bodies and hands with the Nyasa mantra, and then apply the same mantra upon the body of the child. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.6.21.
So we're about to learn the procedure of ashrama for those of you who don't know how to do it. And it's very interesting to know, it says in the Bhagavatam, the gopis perform this ceremony. So it's not some, you know, ritual that's of no value. So I'd like to continue the next paragraph.
Ashramanam, or sipping water, is a means of purification. As immersing the body in water brings about physical and subtle cleansing.
A little slower.
as immersing the body in water brings about physical and subtle cleansing, so taking water infused with mantras into the body by sipping performs a similar function. Thus, where purification is required, but it is not inconvenient to bathe, asavanam is prescribed.
Continue, please.
The general process of atamana is as follows. While looking into water cup in your right hand, chant a mantra directed into that water and then sip the water. Then, as you recite more mantras, purify your senses by touching different parts of the upper body. The basic procedure is the same in all types of atamana. The difference lies in the mantras that are chanted while sipping the water. Thus, there are Vaidic, Puranic, Shaivite, Tantric and Vaishnavas Achamanas which are used in corresponding ceremonies.
So, what are the next one?
In giving the rules for Vaishnava Achamana, the Hari Bhakta Vilas quotes from the Kashi Kanda, the Yajna Valkya Smriti, the Bharat Vajja Smriti, the Kurma Purana and the Vishnu Purana. These rules are summarized as follows. A devotee should perform achamana to achieve physical and mental purity before performing spiritual activities such as applying tila, chanting Gayatri and Japa, performing puja and homa, observing avrat, taking prasad, reading or reciting shastra or mantras, and meditating. It is also recommended to perform achaman after rising from bed, bathing, dressing, touching the lips, eating, going to an impure place, spitting or coughing, speaking improper words, touching something impure, and returning from a journey. One should perform achaman twice before performing a homa, chanting Gayatri, worshipping, eating and giving in charity, as well as after going to cremation grounds, touching the lips and talking to a chandala.
The place where a devotee performs achamana should be pure, that is free from hair, bones, ash or any other impure item. The water should be cool, fresh, without bubbles or foul odor or taste, and untouched by fingernails, hair or any impure item. Rainwater, being in the mode of passion, should not be used.
Okay, so what is the last paragraph?
Out of respect for a spiritual activity, you should not perform achaman with your head or throat covered, without wearing the sacred thread for men, with your shikha untied, without having your kaupna or cloth tucked in at the back, without first cleaning your hands and face, with shoes on while standing or while sitting on shoes, or sitting with knees or feet showing.
Okay. So, what's Archman?
Means of purification.
Very good. A means of purification. Okay. How's it done?
Infusing water with the
That's how it's done. You just infuse water with mantras.
Using the
How water. Is it done? You just read it. How is it done?
Sipping water.
From the right hand.
Sipping water from the right hand. Okay, we've got 2 points there. Any more?
Chanting the mantra.
Directed into the water. The idea is like you chant the mantra and you're with your eyes directing the mantra into the water. What does it do when you direct the mantra into the water? It purifies the water. Is that all? It does a bit more than that.
Purifies our senses.
Makes it transcendental. Krishna's name is a bit more than pure. Transcendental. Yeah. What else? Two types of achaman. It says here there's many types of achaman.
Vaidic, Puranic, Shaivite, Tantric.
Yeah, we just generally do two tracks in this con, and that's like there's a simple ashram, which is the first three steps, or the Vaishnava ashram, which is the full one. And it essentially, it's just like the other one doesn't have the mudras and stuff with it. What times do we perform ashram?
Before offering
an arti.
Yeah,
there's one simple answer to all of these.
Before
having
your service.
No. Well, you could sort of say that. Before performing any spiritual activity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you can do it before chanting japa, you can do it before studying shastra, before doing a homi, before doing deity worship, etc., etc., etc. Before any spiritual activity. You know, even if you, when you go into the kitchen to cook for the deities, you can do ashram before that if you want to. You know, in London, I know the devotees do that. And there's a whole list down there recommended times of performing ashram, but generally you see that Vaishnavas perform ashram before spiritual activities. Less common for them to perform ashram before bodily activities, or after bodily activities I mentioned here.
Just one question.
Yeah.
Is this the water has to change every one ashram, or do you use the same water?
I change it every time because dust can settle on the water. Mm. And you never take it for granted that the water in an ashram cup is clean.
And Sindhu, the ashramana always has to be done sitting on the floor, or like in the temple room, in the paracharana area room, the ashramana cup is there, so we have to sit down, or we can stand up and.
Well, what does it say here? It says, out of respect for spiritual activity, you should not perform ashram with your head at a very sacred temple while standing. Or while sitting on shoes or sitting with your knees or feet. Generally, you sit on the floor, or there's an asana, which I can show you in a minute. What we can do now is, if you move all the chairs back, all sit on. According to Shastra, there's two ways you can sit. When you're doing ashram, you sit like this, just regular cross-legged. Or if there's no asan, then it's recommended that you sit like that. You put this foot behind you, sit on your foot, and with this leg up. Yeah? And there's another one, which I've heard, I've not seen it in the book or anything, but it's called the kukut asan, or hen asan, which I can't do. But it's, and I just can't get my feet down on the ground, and I fall over if I do it, you know. But it's like this with both your feet flat. But I find this very inconvenient because my arm's in the way, or my leg's in the way of my arm when I'm sipping. Whereas if it's like this, I can easily sip the water. Like that. But better is if you have an asan. Usually, what's the best kind of asan?
Kusha
grass. Why is that?
Pure.
Pure. Simple. Now, I'll just go through it once to show you how quick it is. It's not. The full ashram is a very simple procedure. Well, actually, it was off. First thing, wash your hands. Because it mentions there what we've read out before, you're supposed to wash your hands first. So that's it. That's how long it takes. Not a very complicated thing. And so what we can do is just go through it step by step. And if there's any questions as we're going along, please feel free to ask. Yeah? So first thing, wash your hands. So you may have to go a little bit slower so each person gets a chance to just have to share with you. Alright? And it doesn't matter which way you do it, which hand you hold the spoon, it doesn't really matter. I just do it with one like that. Very simple thing. Then, you need to put the spoon in your left hand. Okay? Now, just one point I often like to make regards to ashram is what's the idea of ashram? What were saying before, what does it mean?
Purification.
It means a purification. And so, we're purifying ourselves with water. So, what does the water need to be?
Clean.
Yeah, exactly pure or clean. So if the water, if the container the water is kept in is not clean, what's the water going to be?
Unclean.
And if the spoon that you're sipping the water out of is not clean, yeah, what's the water going to be? So it just astounds me that the devotees never clean the cup of the spoon. Now we're using this for personal purification, yet the thing is, if you don't have this consciousness, it's just a ritual. That's all it is. It serves no purpose at all. It's just a ritual. But if we understand what it is we're doing, and we take the endeavour to make sure that the spoon is always spotlessly clean, inside the cup is spotlessly clean, because all of the jaras are using this for their personal purification before they go on the altar, this is a meditation. And this helps in our purification. Yeah? But if we just clean them, and as long as the outside is clean, it doesn't matter. That's all people look at anyhow. That's no value. So anyhow.
But don't you find that after, like say for example, if you have the same thing for a long time, years, it just because it's sitting in the water, it becomes harder and harder to polish it?
No. Never find it a problem. I mean, I recently got an Ashram cup from Vrindavan that had been used there for about 15 years. And Vrindavan was very hard. And I cleaned it up, no problems. They only become hard to clean if they're not cleaned every day.
Yeah.
If you clean them every day, because it's metal. You know, I mean, when I clean these things, I use an abrasive, what do you call them, Scotch-Brite. I find them really good for cleaning these things. All these cups that are clean were cleaned with these ones were cleaned with this one wasn't clean. So these light coloured ones. There's a few light coloured ones around. They were cleaned with like this one over here. Yeah, these ones were cleaned with normally with tamarind and scotch brite, and it just brings them up really shiny. And these are bell metal. Personally, like the bell metal ones better. But these were cleaned just with scotch brite and soap water. Cleans them very well. Okay, so what you do is you take the water, the spoon in your left hand, and pour a small amount into the right hand. It doesn't really matter how much, just one spoonful. Some people say 3 drops, but there's no, as far as I understand, no rule on it. And the idea, you cup your hand a little bit so the water stays there. If you keep your hand flat, it won't flow out. There's no mudra or anything involved. You just open your hand like that. And you look at the water and chant. Om Keshavaya Namaha. And then by raising the thumb, it forms a channel here. And then you sip silently the water. Alright, then again, take a spoonful of water, put it in your hand. And what do you chant next time? Om what? Naraya Naya. Naraya Naya. Most of us say Om Narayan Namaha, but it's actually Naraya Naya, because we're chanting of Narayan, not just his name. So Om Narayan Naya Namaha. And again?
No?
Not necessary. Why is it not necessary? Huh? Why would you want to clean your hand? Yeah? Maybe. What's just happened? We've looked at the water and rejected the Lord's name into the water, so the water becomes transcendental. That transcendental water touches our lips. What happens to the lips? Become purified. Yeah. Not the water becomes dirty, but how can you make transcendental water dirty? Then next mantra is Om Madhavaya Namaha. Let's sit there. Then when I'm doing it slow like this, I need to read. I mean, there are 20 years or more, I'm just like, don't have any problems. Then, okay, so, Om Govindaya Namaha. Now, you can take the spoon in your left hand and sprinkle like that. Normally, I just do it like this, Om Govindaya Namaha. It's easier. Then, Vishnave Namaha on the left hand. Then, all the fingertips, yeah? Madhusudanaya Namaha. Om Trivikramaya Namaha.
Don't then, like this?
Just the fingertips, yeah? Yeah. Usually with my hand, because my fingers are, you know, this one's long and the other's short, I round them a little bit so they all touch together. Yeah? So just Madhusudana, Tripakramayama. Then, hang on, I'll run ahead. Now with the base of the thumb, different people give different interpretations of where that is. I think that the thumb ends there. Yeah? So that would be the base of the thumb. It's just where that knuckle is there. Some people say it's down there, but to me the thumb ends there. So you know, Vamanaya Sridhara, just you can do it in a wiping motion, just Vamanaya Namaha, Sridharaya Namaha. So just across the top, but not actually on the lips, because the lips are not clean. Above the lips, Om Vamanaya Namaha, Om Sridharaya Namaha, like that. So just a U-turn sort of thing, yeah?
Well,
like that.
Just purify them, that's what you were just saying.
Yeah.
You make more of a
but maybe you've dribbled on the lips since then.
Sorry?
Maybe you've dribbled on your lips since then. Yeah? Yeah? And then, Hrishikeshaya Namaha, water on both the hands, again. Then on the feet, Padmanabhaya Namaha, we won't pretend I don't have socks on. Yeah? And it's actually good to keep your feet covered when you're doing archery as much as you can. It mentions that here in the other sheet. Then, Dhammadaraya Namaha, you look into the water, Dhammadaraya Namaha, and then on the top of your head. Then we go through the mudras. And you start off like this, with all the fingertips, Vasudevaya Namaha, above and below. Then forefinger and thumb, touch the outer. It says here to touch the nostril, but you don't actually put it inside the nostril, on the outside. Yeah? All the gates of the body are impure. Yeah, so Vasudeva, what is it, Sankarsana Namaha, Prajubnaya Namaha, yeah? Then, always check with my ringers so I know which one's the ring finger. One of the things about getting married, I know which one my ring finger is now. Then we're on to Om Aniruddhaya Namaha, so this is the right eye, and again, not the eye, but just outside the eye, yeah? Aniruddhaya Namaha, Purushottamaya, Om Purushottamaya Namaha. Then, forefinger again, right ear, Adokshijaya Namaha, Om Adokshijaya Namaha. Then, left one, Om Nrsimhaya Namaha. Right, then, turn the page. Then, this one here, little finger, and the thumb, the navel. Om Chutaya Namaha. Then palm of your hand, flat hand on the heart. You will usually do it here, but out here somewhere. Om Janardanaya Namaha. Then Om Upendraya Namaha. Then Om Haraya Namaha. Om Krishnaya Namaha. Om Tad Vishnu Paramahara Sura Vashanti Sura Indiyu Chakshura Sampati Krishna Vishnu. That's it. It's up to you. Usually, just the first three steps is what most people do at home. As it says there in the third paragraph, the procedure for basic archery consists of the first three steps below. If time and circumstances permit, perform the complete archery. As far as I understand, it's the established standard here that they do the full arch and then people go on the altar. Prabhupada used to do the first three steps. But you know, like home worship, you don't want to put too much attention onto the worship at home. You want to keep your attention on the temple worship. That's what
Prabhupada
wants to do. Yes, yeah, sufficient. Anything else? No? Okay, so moving on. Who hasn't got one of these? Anyone else can just give their name to
Simon
Blue.
Yeah.
Oh, anyone who's got Pancho Pradeep, this information's already there. Yeah? I'm not coming up with anything new. Prabhu's? Hari Gopal. Maybe he's asking the question you're just asking about, eh?
For the afternoon, the water needs to be clean. So, is it okay to get the water from the tap, I mean, in the house from the sink, you know, or is there any special arrangement to be made for the water?
Well, if you can take it from the Ganges, that's very nice. But here, I don't think that's so easy.
Yeah, that's a
problem
to the Ganges.
No, tap water, I mean, we're quite fortunate here. We have decent tap water. Most places in the world, I mean, I know when I do Archman in London, I get a sore throat because the tap water is so bleh.
What I mean is that, let's say, I mean, in the kitchen tap, we use that for the kitchen, I mean, for the drinking or the cooking or various for other purpose, the tap is used.
Yeah.
Is it okay to use the water from the same tap for the Archman?
Yeah, yeah.
As long as not from the bathroom tap.
Yeah, just don't take it from the toilet. That's what it's considered foul. You have a point?
Stop. Well, I've got just a quick point about maybe dropping a drop of Ganges water if you have.
Yes, you can get those bottles of Ganges water, you can also do that. Although, I wouldn't use, I don't know if I'd use Radha Kund water.
Can we use it just chanting Mother Ganges when I say it's possible?
You can, but that's not... See, what I'm doing is teaching the established standards here. So that's not done here. I mean, you can actually do the whole procedure of Samanyaga, which I normally teach as part of this class, but that's not done here, so it's redundant. You know. But if someone wants to do that, there's no problem.
And if you were to say that water, if you have done the water, are you supposed to change the water throughout the day then?
Well, usually... In Mayapur, what they do is they establish on the altar, they have a patra there, which you know, for all the bhog offerings, they normally offer patra and archana to the deities before the offerings, so they can wash their feet and wash their mouth out. And that water is changed several times throughout the day. And they keep it covered with a cloth so it doesn't get dusty. So you can see there's a high consideration of cleanliness there, not just you leave an open container there with water. It's just not appropriate. But for archana, you change the water every time before you do archana. Not that you just come and use a cup that someone just used. You don't know how long the water's been sitting there. You don't know. You just got no idea if it's clean or not. You know, and for a brahmana, if they don't know if something's clean, they'll see to it that it becomes clean. So if you're going to use an archana cup and you don't know if the water's clean in the archana cup or not, how can you possibly do archana with it? It's just not clean. You know, it could have been sitting there for 3 days. You don't know. And it's like, you know, there's so many major roads. You've got Beaconsfield Parade here, you've got all these, like, you know, Kirkwood Road here, so many cars, all these sewage being stirred up. So many major roads around here. It's a very dirty environment, very dusty. You know, anyone who dusts their house knows how dusty the place is. You know, so it's like, you know.
Anyone
who
looks underneath the cupboards in the
paraphernalia
room knows how dusty
the place is. Yeah, I mean, you know, this is an old building too, so there's a lot of dust, you know. Someone goes stomping through the paraphernalia room, all the dust sort of, you know.
Why wouldn't you use Radha Kund water?
Raghunath Das Goswami had a well dug because he didn't want to use Radha Kund water for his personal needs. So I'm kind of like, I'm not sure if it would be appropriate. I don't know. So therefore, I'd probably not do it. You know, he wouldn't brush his teeth or bathe in Radha Kund, or, you know, use the water to brush his teeth or anything like that. It may be okay, but I'm just not sure, so I wouldn't do it.
Oh. Yeah? I have a question from the previous section as well as this continuation of cleanliness and punctuality. Sometimes we find that you know, when the focus is more on preaching or something like that, then deity worship is not such a priority for that Grahastha family or for an individual. Then, since that may not be a priority and preaching is a priority, and because of the multitude of services and sometimes even lack of time, or, you know, like you were talking about the internal part of the spoon, like, you know, so much details are not being taken care of. So how should we balance that, probably, like cleanliness of the maintaining the cleanliness standard, and but, you know, the priority is more of preaching or more of doing services for the temple rather than at home. So
how do we maintain that standard at home? Like, what is the right balance and what should be our approach?
Well, it's just you do. You just do it. It's not like, you know, how do you maintain the balance? You just do it. These things, all these things have to be done. You know, it's not like we just, you know, we, you know, make sure we come to the temple to do the services, and we, you know, you go back home and it looks like a bomb just went off. I mean, what's that? You know, like that's where you live. The place where you live has to be the example of what you're presenting at the temple. Otherwise, it's hypocrisy. You know, you can't, we can't just like be doing a show, an external show for the whole world to see. Yet in our environment, it's something completely different. Because we need to live what we're presenting to others. You know, how will people take us seriously if we don't take it seriously? It's just that one verse, Tasmat Sankirtana Vishnu, in the fourth canto, where Sukadeva Goswami, he's preaching to Parikshit Maharaj. He says, you just understand this so others will take it seriously. So if we don't apply these things in our lives, who else will take it seriously? So if we don't follow these standards of cleanliness at home, who's going to take it seriously? You know, anyone who comes to my home, they'll see it's a very clean place. Because if it's not, and I'm sitting here on the chair telling you to be clean, then I'm a hypocrite. So we have to live a pure life. We, you know, we have to, whether it's brahmachari, grihastha, whatever, we have to live a pure life. Otherwise, how are we, proper said, purity is the force. How are we going to have any effect if we don't live a pure life? So we need to do that. Okay, so I just want to hand these out also. This is also from the Panchrat Pradeep, from the supplement. And you can do this at home as homework if you're interested too. Not that I want you to give it back to me, so I have to ask or anything. But this is mostly just for those of you who don't have a Panchrat Pradeep, you can read about this. Just pass it in that direction over there. And I'll just go over it very briefly right now. Yeah.
I think organisation is the key. If everything is, if you have a place for everything and everything is in its place, then when you have a lot of service on at the temple, and you know, like sometimes it's like, quickly I've got to get home and do something quickly, I've got to rush back to the temple. So it's like, if it's organised, then it's very quick to put things back in its place. But if you're not organised in the first place, and this goes to here at the temple too, like with the standards of the paraphernalia maintenance and things like that. If there is a place for everything, it's much quicker to put things back in its place, and that way it's easier to keep things organised and quicker. You don't have to think so much, it becomes automated.
One thing also with the mental paraphernalia is you clean it every day, it's much easier. If you leave it for a couple of years, hard work, really hard work. I haven't yet found a decent cleaner that's non-toxic. You know, like all these like brasso, silver, etc. have alcohol in them, so they're contaminated. You can use alum, but what you need to do with alum is a natural chemical, and you just put in water and you boil the water and you put so much alum in there that it goes a dark purple, and you just dip the silver in there. That's what silversmiths do. And that makes it clean. What I generally use is just soap and detergent. That seems, you know, soap and a cloth, I mean, that seems to get it reasonably clean. But most of the silver cleaners I've come across are toxic chemicals. I haven't yet found a good one.
I love just lemon juice with the clay.
Tilak. Yeah, it doesn't really do it. It doesn't, but not really. It's not like tilak. I mean, you look at that from the cup there, that comes up really shiny, or this one here. That comes up really shiny just from the scotch brite. You know, that's like the natural colour of the metal. still is softer than that, so you wouldn't want to use it quite right away. Yeah. But you know, Krishna likes copper. Okay, so this one here, these are called the Satsuris. So this is a list that's given by Sanatana Goswami and Hari Bhaktivilas. And these are the six divisions of cleanliness that are very important. Sometimes I play a guessing game with devotees again to try and figure it out, but there's always one they don't get. And it's usually Murti Shuddhi. Because they figure the deity is already clean. So basically, I'll just go through it quickly. There's Snana Shuddhi, purity of place. It means the place where you're doing the worship has to be spotlessly clean. And this applies in so many ways. Just like, you know, like, say for instance, we're dressing the deities. Right? And so, the first thing you do is you take everything down from the altar. You take all the vases off, the pictures, etc., etc., whatever's up on the altar. Then the next thing you need to do is to wipe the altar down. Why?
Purify,
maybe. Yeah. Right? Because there's Mahaprasadam all over the place. Yeah? We're cleansing the altar because, you know, there's the deity's flowers are falling down, the medic tulsi, etc. So you want to wipe away all the Mahaprasadam. Why do you want to do that?
Before you offer the
fresh. Before you what?
Before you offer the fresh step.
No, before you stand up on the altar. Before you get up on the altar and stand on the Mahaprasadam. Yeah. You know, because you put a mat down there, like, say, for instance, you dress Radha Balava, you put a pad down there with a thing on, you're kneeling on top of it. If there's Mahaprasadam there, this is not nice that you're kneeling, you know, it's offensive to kneel on Krishna's Mahaprasadam. So you clean the place. Make sure there's no, you know, hair, stone, bones, ash, all these different other types of things around. It could also mean decorating. You could decorate the place, like sometimes they do this different ranguli and you know, make nice patterns and things like that. Scenting the place. Sometimes people burn incense and stuff like that when they're serving the deities. Different things like that. Purity of articles, dravya shuddhi. This refers to not only the items we're using to worship, like you see with Archman cups, and tomorrow we'll be doing bowl buffing and after, etc. like that, but also the actual items we're offering. So it means, like, you know, all the items we're using for the service of the deity, all the metal paraphernalia, must be spotlessly clean. But everything we're using to offer to the deities also must be pure as we can possibly make it. So it means, like, the bowl where we cook, it's just simple things, like even in the kitchen. When you drop something on the floor, it needs to be washed and put aside. Generally, we avoid the things that drop on the floor. We generally wouldn't offer them directly to the deities, we leave them aside. Unless they're raw things like vegetables and stuff, then you can wash them. You know, like incense. If you drop incense on the floor, what to do? Should we wash it? What do we do?
Huh?
Take another one.
Yeah, it can't be used. What about gilang? Giwik? Can't be used. What about the cloth?
Wash it.
Wash it if it comes to the floor. Now that's another point. Sometimes you'll see here that the pujari is a little bit not sort of observant. And when they're offering the aarti, they put the tray with the flowers and the cloth over it, and one corner of the cloth is touching the ground. So really that shouldn't be offered to the deities. You know? So you need to be careful when you're doing aarti is to make sure that when you put the tray, if you do put the tray on like that, then to make sure that the cloth doesn't touch the floor, because it becomes impure, it can't be offered.
I've seen some people take off the articles on the tray and put them on the marble.
That's what I'm saying. Is if they put the, if they, see, there's two ways of doing it, which we're going to discuss more tomorrow. It's like you can either have everything on the tray, then offer it from the tray, then put it on the ground, right? Or you take everything off the tray, then offer it and put it back onto the tray. Same thing.
The ground is just where you're walking in there.
Huh?
The ground is up there, clean and pure.
Yeah, but you don't put the items you're offering directly on the ground. They're in a holder. Yeah. But what I'm saying is, like, sometimes they take the flower tray with the cloth on top, and the cloth touches the floor, so the cloth becomes impure. Yeah. Alright, purity of body. So this essentially refers to taking a shower, putting on tilak, etc. like that. Purity of mind, chitta shuddhi. the worship, this is the most important element. One of the best means of purity of mind is obviously chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. But also, there's these different prayers that we generally chant before we start called Bhuta Shuddhi. And the whole purpose behind the Bhuta Shuddhi, we're going to discuss that in a minute, is to actually identify ourselves as an eternal servant of Krishna. I'm not this body, I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. Then purity of mantra. What do you mean by purity of mantra?
In what regard?
I'm asking that question. What do you mean by purity of mantra?
What do you mean?
That's what I'm saying. What do we mean by purity of mantra?
Is
the person who says it has to be pure, for the mantra to be pure. The person who's
chanting the mantra
needs to be pure. Well, that was all the problem. It's a serious one, this is my
case. How many are going to quote from the text? It says halfway down that you desire to utilize the full potency of the mantras in service to the Lord.
Okay, that's one another point. Stop it.
I was just thinking pronunciation and focusing on the mantra itself.
Pronunciation? What else? There's an interesting verse in the Padma Purana which I'd like to quote here. Sampradaya vihinaya mantraste nishkalamataha. If we receive it from a bona fide sampradaya, then the mantra is pure. If it hasn't come in a bona fide sampradaya, it doesn't matter how good your pronunciation is. Nishpala mataha, no fruit. That's the thing, is to receive the mantra in a proper manner. And Murti Shuddhi refers to properly cleansing the deity.
Actually, on the previous point, I want to ask about the mantras in the sampradaya. For example, obviously, you receive your mantra, you know, your Gayatri mantra from your spiritual master and the Hare Krishna mantra. But the additional mantras that are used in deity worship, for example, written in Pancharatra Pradipa or some other books, are they considered to be received in Sampradaya because we haven't heard them directly from?
Well, when we get Gayatri, Pancharatra Gayatri Diksha, we receive a general Gayatri, Guru Mula, Guru Gayatri. Gaura Mula, Gaura Gayatri. Krishna Mula, Krishna Gayatri. That's all you really need. Because, you know, at least in a temple like this, right? Gaura Tai. Gaura Mula, Gaura Gayatri. That's all you need because Gaura is the main deity. You don't need a mantra for Nityananda. You can have it if you like, but you don't need it. Same with Radha Krishna because Krishna is the main deity. Same with Jagannath Deva Subhadra. You only need the mantra for the main deity. You don't need the other mantras.
So you don't use them, or?
Some devotees do, some devotees don't.
For example, there are Mula mantras for Lord Vishnu and Dev.
Yeah, there's Mula mantras for all these deities. Now, I mean, that's one question I've often had, is like, about that, is why include these mantras in a book on deity worship? Does it then require that the guru gives them the mantra? I would think so. Because unless you receive it in a proper manner, from an authorized person, then what's the point of the mantra?
Speaking of the source of the origin of those mantras, do they come from Pancharatra, from Narada Pancharatra, or do they come from another source? And the scripture in our sampradaya?
Yeah, I mean, it would be very hard to establish if it came from Narada Pancharatra or not, because there's no actual version of that available. Not currently extent. Okay, any other questions on those points? Does anyone else want to copy this? So what I want to do now was just I wanted to focus on cleanliness because cleanliness is probably the single most important aspect of deity worship.
Thank you.
I'm reading from is the new presentation of the Pancharatra Pradeep, which we changed the name of it. It's going to be called Method of Worship, because that's what Prabhupada told him to call the deity worship book. He said you can call the book Method of Worship. So Janani Masaru said we should call it Method of Worship, so we changed the Method of Worship. And I'm going to read from chapter 1, and it's called Preparing for Worship. And this basically, what we're going to just go over quickly now, is from the point, well actually even before going to bed, getting ready for worshiping deity. All the different details that is important to observe in preparing ourselves for deity worship. Read a letter here. This was written to Shilavati. Deity worship means to be very, very clean. You should try to bathe twice daily. The deity should never be approached without having bathed first and changed to clean clothes after passing stool, etc. Keep teeth brushed after each meal, fingernails clean and trim. Be sure that your hands are very clean before touching anything on the altar or the deities. And cleanse the deity room, altar and floor daily, thoroughly. Shine the various arati paraphernalia after arati. The idea is somewhat painless. That will satisfy Krishna. So we thought that was an important one to include at the start there. Alright, so preparation for a day of devotional service. When does it begin?
Night before.
Exactly. It begins the night before. How do we begin the night before?
Meditating.
Meditating? But something very practical and functional. Yeah, go to bed at a proper time. You know, if you're getting up at 3 a.m. in the morning, it's pretty stupid going to bed at 2 a.m. in the morning. You're not going to get a good night's sleep. Yeah, so go to bed at a proper time. And, take make proper arrangements, if you need someone to wake you up, or if you've got an alarm clock or whatever. So make proper arrangements. And it's also recommended, to rinse your mouth with cool water, and wash your feet, etc., things like that before you go to bed. You can offer obeisance to your spiritual master before you go to bed. Prabhupada recommended Krishna book reading before going to bed. It helps us to meditate upon Krishna. Then, and Prabhupada meant, this is a quote here from Prabhupada, one should not sleep more than 6 hours daily. One who sleeps more than 6 hours out of 24 is certainly influenced by the mode of ignorance. A person in the mode of ignorance is lazy and prone to sleep a great deal. Such a person cannot perform yoga. So, that's there. Okay, so this is also in the order that's given in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. The next section is called Pratasmikikritya. And it's about waking up and remembering the Lord. Lord Krishna himself set the example by waking and performing early morning regulative activities called Nitya Kriya. Such as rising early. What's the normal time for rising for a Vaishnava? What is Vaishnava?
Brahma Muhurta.
Brahma Muhurta.
An hour and a half before sunrise.
An hour and a half before sunrise. So that means in a month's time, we can be out really early.
I've always wondered about that. In the winter time in the UK, it's dark until late.
Well, you can even go up to the Manx, and during for 6 months of the year, the sun doesn't come up. The year, it doesn't go down. Prabhupada, I read a few letters about this, and in the beginning, Prabhupada was telling to do it according to sunrise. And then he instructed, he said, do it according to fixed time. So he fixed time Mangalati at 4:30, and then had devotees do it according to that. So usually, as much time as you need to prepare to get ready for it. So I take about 45 minutes to get ready in the morning. So, I know one senior Vaishnava takes 12 minutes, I don't know how he does it, but he takes 12 minutes from the time he wakes up to the time he's ready.
He's a very clean person. It's not like he's skipping the shower. He's very clean. I don't know how he does it. Huh?
That's a quick sprinkle.
Oh, he's spotlessly clean. I stayed in the apartment next door to him, and I was in his room one day, and I saw on his desk, he's got a sheet of glass on the desk, and under the desk he's got his schedule, what he does every day, right at this time, and then bathe and this, and then had his time. It's 12 minutes. Wow, how does it feel? Okay, so waiting for bed. The time early in the morning, 1.5 hours before sunrise, is called Brahma Muhurta. During this Brahma Muhurta, spiritual activities are recommended. Spiritual activities performed early in the morning have a greater effect than any other part of the day. So waking and chanting early in the morning hours, known as Brahma Muhurta, one should get up and immediately chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, or at least Krishna Krishna. In this way, one should remember Krishna. Some slokas or prayers should also be chanted. So generally when we wake up in the morning, the first thing we'll do is chant Hare Krishna, then get out of bed and offer obeisance to our spiritual master. And there's a story, I can't remember who it was, but Prabhupada woke his servant up one time, and his servant got up and said, yes, Prabhupada said, pay your obeisances. Pay your obeisances when you wake up. And pay your obeisances to the guru. Well, when you get out of bed. You don't normally pay obeisances in the bed. So Guru Pranam offering basis of spiritual master. Bed's an unclean place.
No, even after taking a shower or
a No, straight away. You know. So after waking up and chanting, this is called Guru Pranam. After waking up and chanting the Lord's name, honor your spiritual master and the Lord by offering pranams or obeisances accompanied by prayers. After offering obeisances to your spiritual master, rise up and make your bed or arrange and put away your bedding. So also, we don't leave our bedding unmade, or if you have bedding you can roll up, you roll it up and put it away. Many ashrams I've stayed in, it's like the brahmacharis will roll up the bedding, put it away and wipe the floor. It used to be like that in the London ashram. It was really good. They had this thing where all the brahmacharis would put their bedding and they all wipe the floor before they got up, before they had a shower. It's quite nice, the ashram was a very sattvic environment. Evacuating and cleansing. Srila Prabhupada writes, Prapta Kritya means that one should evacuate regularly in the morning and then cleanse himself by taking bath. One has to gargle, archman, and brush his teeth, Danta Dharmana. He should do this either with twig or toothbrush, whatever is available. This will purify the mouth. Then one should take his bath. Evacuating and cleansing before bathing. So there's a whole list of rules which I won't read, because a lot of it's to do with passing stool outside, which I don't think we can do here in another country. But generally speaking, the procedure is like, if you have to shave in the morning, then you do that first, then clean your teeth. And normally you brush your teeth first, then scrape your tongue. Because otherwise, if you do it the other way around, then what you use for brushing your teeth winds up on the tongue. So by brushing your teeth first, then scraping your tongue, the tongue is the maximum clean. Okay? But this is done after passing stool, or passing urine, because what will happen, primarily passing stool, what will happen is when you pass stool, is this unpleasant aroma, this contaminating aroma goes in the atmosphere, and it settles on the palate. Okay? So if you pass stool after you brush your teeth, then your mouth is unclean again. And so normally, you pass stool, shave, brush your teeth. So because the same thing is when you're shaving, right? If you're passing stool, then this stuff from the stool also sits on your bristles. Yeah? So the idea is to be progressively more clean. Yeah? And for some devotees, they like to drink a lot of water in the morning. So for those persons, I recommend brushing their teeth and scraping their tongue twice. Because some people find it helps them to go to the bathroom, helps them to pass. But if you drink water without scraping your tongue, then what happens is all the arm that's sitting on the tongue is you rinse that back down into your stomach, which is not good for health. So before you ingest anything in the morning, you need to scrape your tongue. Yeah? So if you're going to drink water before going to the toilet, some people just find it necessary, then scrape your brush your teeth and scrape your tongue first, then after you pass, then do it again. Just for the cleanliness of it. Okay, any question on that? It's interesting the amount of devotees who don't do it the right way around. And there's a whole list of places where we're not supposed to pass stool. This is kind of funny. We've only got one place to do it in our house. Can't do it in a plough field, among grains, a cow pasture, on a road, or a path. Guys, you imagine doing it on a road? On the bank of a river or a pond? Cleansing after evacuating. There's an interesting conversation where Prabhupada's talking, because like, when do we normally take bath? But after what period, what sort of contaminations would we normally take bath? So after passing stool, we've established that one, okay? What else?
You have slept for more than...
We've slept? I think it's not really a fixed time, you know, because if you feel groggy, you know, then you should take bath. Like, because Prabhupada talks about a snap, and he talks about this snap meaning you feel refreshed and revitalized. Then after a snap, you don't need to have a shower or anything.
How long
varies for different people.
What's the maximum before you have to?
I don't think there is a maximum. It just depends on you. You know, like after you've been sleeping for a while, and like toxins start coming out of your body and stuff. Yeah, I mean, as a rule of thumb, I'd say 20 minutes, but it varies for different people. But if you sleep on your bed, then you have to. But if you put a wool chadar over your bed, you don't have to. Because wool's pure. Wool's pure, no matter what, it's pure. Yeah? That's the tricks of pujaris. You want to sleep, put a chadar over your bed. Yeah? Sometimes like some temples I've been doing so many aftis and offerings a day, just exhausted and I need to sleep. It's like, oh, I really need to chill out of bed and go to sleep. Okay, so sleeping, passing stool, what else?
After
the funeral? What other times do we need?
Barbershop.
Cutting nails. After cutting the nails.
After cutting nails, shaving face, shaving head, shaving underarms, shaving legs, whatever you should shave.
What about traveling in public transport?
Yeah, anything. Going out, you know, even going in public, you need to bathe after that. What else?
After traveling.
Just going out. And you're going any impure place, coming into contact with any impure thing. What about after eating? You need to bathe after eating.
Not immediately.
What if we're going on the altar?
Yeah.
Well, why would you bathe after eating? What do you eat? What is the nature of prasad? What does it do to us? So why do you need to bathe? You don't need to bathe after taking prasad. And actually, it's forbidden in Shastra to bathe after taking prasad.
I think it's...
you don't bathe your clothes, you wash your clothes. Yeah, you have to change your clothes, that's a good point. If you eat... although, when you eat Mahaprasadam, if you drop it into your mouth, that's okay. Yeah? But don't do it publicly because people don't understand. Yeah? Well, what is this Vajari eating, you know? And he's going on the altar. I got caught out doing that once, I got in trouble for it. it's okay just to drop small amounts of Mahaprasadam into your mouth and you can still be pure. Yeah? But if you're eating regularly, then what happens is there's a possibility that small morsels of food may come out of the mouth mixed with saliva and fall on the clothes, then the clothes become contaminated. Yeah? But it's a common thing with pujaris is if they need to take breakfast and they've got to go back on the altar, is they'll get a plate of prasadam, go through the ashram, then take the cloth off, put on a gumshoe, sit down, take prasadam, then rinse the mouth out at least three times. Thoroughly rinse the mouth out. Actually, I think somewhere here it mentions to rinse the mouth out 10 times. and then the comment is made, whatever how many times you rinse your mouth is, the main thing is that mouth should be free from all particles of food. At least three. That's what I do. Wash the feet. Yeah? Hands, rinse the mouth, wash face. And then put the clothes on, do archman again, go back on the altar, consider to be pure. Huh? You want to share?
It's not only because the particles of prasadam drop on you, but it's also because a lot of time you put your fingers in your mouth and you may touch it once.
Sorry?
It's also because when you're eating, you're putting your fingers in your mouth and then you may touch the cloth.
Maybe a Valencia would do that. A Brahman wouldn't touch anything with the hand that had been using these. Well, they're not Brahmana. Simple. I mean, you see, after eating, they walk around touching people and things. It's all like, you just don't do it. It's just like, that's just Brahminical behavior. Just because you know that hand's unclean. How would you touch anyone? I mean, why would you touch anyone with that hand? I just couldn't imagine doing that.
Not anyone, yourself.
Even myself, I wouldn't do it.
Well, that's what I'm saying, you may, because, if you're sitting down, you put your hands down, you may unknowingly touch yourself.
Well, unknowingly, that's another consideration. But yeah, so that therefore you just change the cloth.
Yeah.
You know? And if you eat in the cloth, then you have to change it. But certainly the hand is very, very unclean. You've been eating with it. What other types do you need to take part? It's just Brahminical. Prabhupada, when we go out walking, he would come back, he'd wash his feet. Stuff like that. I remember seeing Bhakti Churu Maharaj in London last year, year before. And he took prasadam, he went up to the ashram, he rinsed his mouth down, he washed his feet, washed his hands. It's just Brahminical behavior. Which is kind of impressive for me because London's a cold place. He washed his feet. Alright, rules for evacuating, we don't need brushing your teeth. Brush your teeth daily with a twig or toothbrush. Before bathing in the morning, you must clean your mouth and teeth, otherwise you cannot chant japa or perform deity worship, sacrifices or other spiritual rites. And you need to bathe after brushing your teeth. It's considered, because saliva and stuff can come out. Especially if saliva falls on the upper part of the body, you need to take bath. There's a procedure for brushing your teeth. I think we've all got that figured out, haven't we? And then after teeth, you scrape your tongue with a metal tongue scraper or a twig. Sometimes they use the twig, they bend it and they scrape their tongue like that. And I find silver tongue scrapers really good. Much better than the stainless steel ones, kind of harsh and they make my tongue bleed. But the silver ones are quite good. If you have trouble with stainless steel ones, try the silver one. They're cheap, but they're good. Sika. So then, at this point here, one would tie their sika. Taking a bath before you bathe. It gives you different types of
places you can, you know, sort of water you can use and stuff like that, which I don't think is really relevant for us here because it only comes out of the tap in Melbourne.
Isn't that, you brush your sticker before you bathe also?
Huh?
You brush your sticker before you bathe?
Yeah, I,
And then afterwards as well. Brush it first to get the hairs out, and then when you get out, brush it just so.
Usually you do that before. I mean, see, with a lot of these things, it's like, for instance, you're not supposed to sleep with an untied sitka, right? But I find myself, my hair is so dry, what happens is during the night, if I'm moving around the pillow a little bit, then my sitka becomes knotted. So what I've got in the habit of doing, as a matter of practicality, is I untie my sitka before I go to bed. Just because of the nature of the hair I have, but, you know, you're like, these are the rules, but then the practical application may vary from person to person depending on the circumstances. Yeah, well, it says here, the sticker may be any length, but it should be kept tightly knotted and only untied when you're washing, cleaning and oiling it, going to sleep, attending funeral rites, or observing a period of mourning, since an untied sticker is a sign of death in the family. It is inauspicious to go about one's daily activities with a sticker untied. So you usually just untie it and then oil it, brush it and tie it back up. But if you want to brush it before and after, then you know, tie it and then untie it, sort of thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like untie it, brush it, tie it back up, then bathe. It just depends, you know, whether it becomes too tedious. But you know, definitely to walk around with an untied sticker is inauspicious. Like, particularly you see in Bengal, Vrindavan, there's a funeral, then the men, because you know, normally you don't see ladies at a funeral, it's only thing for men. The men will all have their stickers untied. And it gives, there are seven different types of bath. The benefits of an early morning bath. Now this is an interesting point here. It just talks about the benefits of taking a cold bath in the morning. Such a bath can purify even a sinner, for it has the power to wash away all external and internal contaminations, etc. etc. And that generally, I remember one devotee years ago, he thought, you know, he wanted to take a real cold bath. So what he did was, you know, in these cool rooms, how they have the condenser and they have the hose where the water drips out of the condenser. You put a bucket underneath that, and he collected the cold water, the cold, dirty water that was dripping out of the condenser, and he would bathe in that every morning. Or another time, I used to travel on the buses with my swami, and there's this one guy, he's really fired up, and Ramai Maharaj used to tell these stories about when they were brahmacharya, so he said, I'm going to be a tough brahmacharya like Maharaj. So he used to get down underneath the tap next to the bus in the caravan park and bathe in the water there, you know, underneath the tap. You hear the groaning and moaning and bathing in the water. So we're not trying to inflict suffering upon ourselves, you know? But it's just described in the Shastra that taking a cool bath is beneficial. And so if you can take a cool bath without creating too much austerity or disturbance for the super soul,
is it okay to take a warm bath and then switch on the cold water for a few seconds?
Yeah, why not? Well, I mean, I used to take, every day I used to take a cold bath until I got to Poland and the water there was just insanely cold. And that broke my rhythm. I just haven't been able to do it since then. But at our house we have an off-peak hot water system, and like if we ran out of hot water, it doesn't mean I'm not going to take a bath. I just take a bath, cold water, you know, hot water, cold water, I don't care. Sorry?
I remember one devotee from New Zealand telling a story to Jananda Maharaj a couple of years ago about how they used to keep water outside in New Zealand so it would freeze over, so they didn't have like ice cold water bathing in the morning, and Maharaj just said that's his verification.
it's kind of a mental sort of thing, you know, because then you go brag to all your friends about how cold they have it. I'm much more austere than you. It's just, you know, just be realistic, you know. You don't have to tell everyone about it. And the thing is, like, this is beneficial. That's all. And there's seven different types of bath. There's Parkiva Snan,
using earth. It's actually considered very cleansing to rub earth over your body. And you'll find traditionally in India that when people use the bathroom, they go past stool, they don't wash their backside with water, they use earth, mud and water, and so very cleansing. Of course you need to filter the earth, make sure there's no bits and pieces in it. Could be very unpleasant. Varuna snan, using water. Agneya snan, using ashes from a sacrificial fire. You know, like when you've done fire, you rub these ashes over your body, it's very purifying. Vayavya snan. Any idea what that might be? It's contacting the air, which is carrying the dust raised by the hooves of the calves, or the cows. First time I went to Vrindavan, actually the air was full of, it was in the evening, and the air was full of this dust raised by the calves. It was the most transcendental experience, actually, the first time I went to Vrindavan. Divya Snan. Who's had a Divya Snan?
Is that the rain that drops when the sun sets?
Sunshower. Yeah, it's a Divya Snan. It's considered very cleansing. It's an ethereal bath in the rain that falls while the sun is shining. Mantra Snan. Chanting appropriate verses while sprinkling oneself with water. And Manashika Snan. Meditating on Vishnu. Okay, so lots of details on that. Frequency of bathing. I want to get on the pot. Vaishnava Paridhan. Any questions on your bathing and stuff? And just one point. Oh, sorry.
There's one question about that. You know, sometimes when you travel, especially on the train or like that, you know, have you ever had experience with taking a bath on the train?
Yeah, I do it all the time. Especially India is really easy to do it. You know, because you just like, you get yourself a Bisleri bottle, chop off the top, go on the toilet, lock the door, and under the tap, and like that. You do it in India all the time, but you know, like places where they've got these like modern deluxe toilets, what can you do, you know? I don't think they'd really like it if there's like water flying out underneath the door. But I mean, you make, try your best to make it do what you can, sort of thing. But India is really easy. It's really easy because the bathrooms, you know, you just empty out onto the tracks. I don't do that in the West. Okay, and also one thing about bathing, what's the function of bathing? So, if the place where you're bathing is impure, will you become purified? That means the bathroom, as the rest of your house, also needs to be spotlessly clean, as does the toilet, etc., etc. It's not just like you keep your altar clean and everything else is a pigsty. Yeah. Everything, every part of your house needs to be spotlessly clean. Otherwise, because you're living there, you become contaminated. Yeah. So you're kind of, you know, defeating the purpose of what you're doing. Okay. Next thing is a Vaishnava dress, Rastra Parinam. To cover the lower part of the body is a principle of human civilization. And when men or women forget this principle, they become no better than animals. So it discusses the other male devotees wear kopan, upper and lower cloth. Wearing only a lower cloth is improper. Now in South India they do it like that, but Gaudiya Vaishnavas don't. Gaudiya Vaishnavas wear chadar at least, you know. And usually chadar is worn over the left shoulder with the right shoulder open, so it's easy for worship and stuff like that. Different cultures, but our culture is based on Gaudiya Vaishnavism. In some temples you go to, for instance, they don't allow men to come with even a curtain on. They ask them to take their upper cloth off. There's more in South India though. Anyone who offers respects and obeys the deity while wearing garments on the upper portion of his body is condemned to be a leper for 7 births. It doesn't apply to ladies. Yeah, it applies to men. But interestingly enough, it basically means that when you come before the deity off your basis, the first time you do it, at least you should do it bare chested. So what I do, because I don't deal well with cold weather, is when I'm doing deity worship, I do that. Is when I'm coming before I go on the altar, is I'll pay my obeisances bare chested. Janani Masaru in Mayapur, he does it every time. First time he comes before the deity in the day, he'll pay his obeisances bare chested to the deity. It means he takes off his shirt, his chal, whatever it is he's got, pays his obeisances, then puts his clothes back on. So it's an austerity that men perform for the pleasure of the deity. So clothes, what sort of clothes are suitable?
Clothes with no seams.
For men that's practical. For ladies not very practical at all. Yeah? Well, let's talk about the types of clothes first, yeah, rather than the fabrics. What types of clothes? What's suitable for ladies? Sari? What else? Sari goes with Choli. Yeah. What else? Nothing else. That's right. Sari Choli, that's it. Yeah. No gopi skirt. No, what do they call those things? Punjabis. Not suitable. Yeah. This is not suitable. Sari Choli, that's it. What about for men? Dolce Chara, bus. Nothing else. Yeah. Okay, what type of fabric?
Cotton.
Cotton is actually one of the better fabrics to use. And one of the primary reasons it's good to use is because it doesn't burn very well. Yeah. What else is good to use?
Silk.
Silk is pure. But it's flammable. Highly flammable. So if you want to wear silk saris or silk dhotis on the altar, be careful of the flames. A lot of flames on the altar, and most of them are down around foot height. You don't have eyes on your toes, so it's a little bit hard to be aware of them sometimes. What else?
What about jute?
Jute. Jute is also good.
Wool?
Wool is also good. And actually, in Hari Bhakta Vilas, because there was some controversy about whether it's okay to wear wool or not when you're doing deity worship. And some people feel very strongly about this, that you can't wear wool while you're doing deity worship. So Banu Maharaj looked in the Hari Bhakta Vilas and verse 158, the last number 4, wool is the best cloth for all activities including worship of the men, Pitas and the Lord. It is always pure. And so Sanatana Goswami is saying it's the best. And it's not flammable, it smoulders. When you set fire to the wall, it smoulders. So, you know. What about synthetics? Huh? Yeah, synthetics are impure. And sometimes I've seen some devotees are wearing, like particularly, like mostly men when they wear silk, it's really easy to pick. I mean, makka silk is, they call this makka, but technically it's not makka. It's just cheating makka. And it's just cheating, because what they do is they put knots in it to make it look like it's makka. But it's just some. Yeah. A lot of these so-called silk saris are actually synthetics. So you need to check them out. And the best way to check them out is pull a thread out and burn it and see what happens. If it goes to powder, then it's generally silk. But if it goes to a little hard thing, or it frizzles, then it's synthetic. Yeah, so you just need to be aware of that. And what about how often do you need to wash cotton? Yeah, essentially after use. How much use it needs to be washed. What about jute? No, jute can be worn a couple of times. Usually you can use jute a few times before washing.
Why?
Huh?
Why?
Just because of the nature of the cloth?
No, this jute, I thought it was a combination of cotton and something else.
No, it's made from plant fiber.
What?
Plant fiber. It's a bashed up plant fiber. What about silk? How often do you need to wash silk?
Huh?
So we can just air dry it.
No, you've got to wash it.
Is it once a week?
We're in 7 times.
Seven times.
Yeah.
Third method.
Had 2 weeks, just one is not contaminated.
According to Shastra, many times. Silk remains pure. I have it in here somewhere. This says, silk remains pure even after being worn many times. What does many times mean? I have no idea, but it says many times. Yeah. A rule of thumb again is like, you know when you freshly wash cloth, the feeling it has? Yeah? When it loses the feeling, wash it. Simple. If it doesn't feel fresh, wash it. Because, you know, if cloth becomes contaminated, it needs to be washed. If it loses the freshness, it needs to be washed. So that means, like, if you have a stack of saris or dhotis this high, right, and you're taking the one off the top and putting the fresh ones on the bottom, by the time you get through your stack, you're wearing impure cloth. So better you have a small pile of clothes. Right? And keep them washed. And it says here, devotees should wear clean, freshly washed cloth, especially when cooking or worshipping the deity. I also suggest that when you're, if you're in the pujari room doing service there, washing deity paraphernalia, etc. like that, also freshly washed clothes. Use cloth that has not been washed and dried again is considered unclean. Cloth worn while eating, sleeping, passing urine or stool, or having sex is unclean. Cloth which touches anything impure, such as wine, meat, and blood, the dead body of a woman in the menstrual period, is also contaminated. Cloth washed in a public laundry service. Cloth washed by a public laundry service, not in a public laundry service. If you go to a laundromat and wash the clothes yourself, that's okay. But if you engage someone else to do it, it's not clean, because they're not clean. Because some people that live in apartments, they don't have a laundry, what can they do? That'll be practical.
In India, there are many
male
servants who come to wash
clothes. No. Not acceptable. You have to do it yourself. Mm-hmm. How do you know? You know, if you know they're clean. Well, it's quite common. I mean, there's so many people there, they have servants come to do it. It's like, in Mayapur, we have a woman come and wash our clothes. Right? So she washes my clothes, she's not allowed to bring them in. Okay? My wife brings them in. Because they're up on the roof, the purification of the wind and the sun and stuff like that. So a pure person is getting them when they're purified, yeah?
Until they are wet, they can handle, but once they are dry...
Yeah, but, I mean, I would prefer it myself if we didn't have that arrangement. That's what's going on, you know? It would be better. You know, I've considered sometimes doing it myself, but I just don't have the time because of the school, etc. But it's better if it's done ourselves. But yeah, the same here, public laundry service. If you do it, wash the clothes yourself, it's okay. And this is, and cloth that though washed has become stale are also unclean and therefore unfit to wear during deity worship. And while worshipping the deity, you should not wear the following types of cloth. Damp cloth, cloth that is too long or too short to be worn properly. Stitched or sewn cloth for men, torn cloth, oil or dirt stained cloth, soiled cloth, burnt cloth, or cloth chewed by animals or insects. However, you may wear silk many times before washing it, provided it has not contacted anything impure or been worn in impure places. Do not wear synthetic clothes while worshipping or cooking for the deity. Yeah?
So we shouldn't take the tram to the temple, we should walk.
Well, what I would suggest, I mean, I remember when I was in, where was it? Somewhere in Russia, I think it was in Russia, central Russia. There was devotees there, they had to, you know, he was the head pujari, and he had to come a long way to the temple. And so I encouraged him to bring his clean clothes in a bag, have a shower and get to the temple with his clean clothes on. Because, you know, you're on public transport. I mean, if you're not on the altar, it's not, you know. But if you're going on the altar, you're going on public transport, you're brushing up against unclean people.
You know, it's just practical, you know, that you know, how could you consider yourself clean in such an environment? But if you're going from your home and you're coming in a car, your car's clean, like, you know, if you have a dog, dog's in the car, you're not clean. You know? It may laugh, I have seen it, you know, the Jays don't have dogs, it's just an amazing phenomenon. And the dog lives in the house, and the dog lives and rides in the car with them and stuff like that. And somehow or other they think that's okay. No, if you contact anything impure, you become impure. So if you go on a tram, you know, and you know, I don't think trams are necessarily pure. Or the people who travel on the trams. So naturally the clothes become impure. So yeah, try to make an alternative arrangement. Either walk to the temple or arrange to bathe at the temple as you come.
Okay. I just wanted to ask about the colors of the clothes. You know, in the Nectar of Devotion, it mentions the red and the blue should not be worn in front of deities.
Yeah.
And some yogis, for example, may have like blue
clothes.
Yeah. So, first of all, what's the reason for that? And second of all,
Well, it generally means like one colour, you know, the full colour cloth. There's two quotes from Prabhupada on this. One quote, someone asked him a question, he said, there's a Shastric injunction, it must be followed. And that was it. And then someone else asked him about it, he said, well, I never follow these things. I don't know. Colour cloth. Yeah, grihasthas wear white, uninitiated brahmacharis, unmarried bachelors wear white, sapphire colour is reserved for renunciates. On festival days, some gaudiya pujaris wear brightly coloured dhotis and chadars. You may have seen when we did the installation of Panchatattva, we all had these like bright, they were meant to be like a bright yellow colour. My wife freaked out when she'd look up and swear it was almost saffron dhoti. The dyeing didn't exactly work out, you know. It was a bright colour. Yeah, so sometimes that's also the, you know, because it kind of gives a nice look, you know, when all the pujaris have got the same sort of colour cloth on. Yeah, so then Vaishnava Chinna, identifying oneself as a Vaishnava, basically refers to putting on tilak. Who can name all the places we place tilak on the body? Huh? Nobody?
Well, you can put
forehead.
Yeah?
Navel.
Yeah?
Chin.
Neck.
Left side and the right side.
Yeah.
And on the two forward.
Yeah.
Arms and their shoulders.
Yeah.
Shoulders. The back, the upper back.
The secret too.
I've seen it in different places. Sometimes some say the secret.
Is it the water that's meant to go on?
Who knows the mantra? Who knows the mantra which or the mantra that's given in the Hari Bhaktivilasa about putting on tilak? Well, just the whole mantra. It says, what do you say? Om Keshavayam Jaya. So that's the first thing. You don't need to chant the mantra while you're putting on the tilak. It says Jayen. What does Jayen mean? Meditate. Mm-hmm. Okay? So you meditate on Vishnu while you're placing, you meditate on Om Keshavaya, Jayen, Narayan, etc., etc., like that. You meditate on these names. And then it says Tat Prakshalana Joyam Tu. What's that? Tat, that. Prakshalana, washing the hands. Toyam, water. Tu, but. Vasudeva, move the knee. And the water that's left in your hand, after washing your hands, you wipe on the seeker. Mm. So you don't put tilak here. Why?
Makes your hair fall out.
Yeah, it makes your hair fall out. And have you ever seen devotees? It's common with men devotees who don't have very strong hair. They've got this little sort of like interesting receding part of the hair like this here. Because they take the tilak all the way up here. Right? And eventually the hairline goes all the way back. Of course, according to the Shastra, you should stop this, the tefillah at the hairline. That's what Shastra says. So, if we, you know, Shastra is so practical.
Or where the hairline should be.
Huh?
Or where the hairline should be. If your hairline is stuck here.
Yeah. It looks nice when the devotee sometimes gets screwed up all the way back. Right? It looks nice. Alright. And there's all sorts of other mantras you can put on your body. You know, like some of your bodies like to stack the Hare Krishna Maha mantra over their body, and chakras and yadas and sankras and padmas and things like that. I'd like to thank, while we're going through this new book, I'd like to thank Rasana Nidhi Maharaji. She rendered all these beautiful drawings for us from the original Panchakriti. He's looking very nicely down the side. Trying to encourage her.
To finish the job.
Right? Oh, she's very talented. Actually, Maharaji came to Fiji. We were in Fiji. We had these deities and they looked like they'd been painted by a 4-year-old, you know. And what are we going to do? You know, so we've got to get an artist. And B. Krishna Maharaj rings up and says, you've got to get an artist to paint the deities. So Maharaji came over to Fiji and painted the deities and put up with my tormenting for quite a while. When it comes to things like painting deities, I'm really particular. And it's interesting, the Padmapurana said, this is in reference to here, right, just so you understand what's going on here, because many different ideas get around about these things with tilak. And it says, Varma Pashu Stiko Brahma Dakshine Sa Cha Sadishiva Madhye Vishnu Vijaniya Hasman Madhyam Nalepaya. On the left side of the tilak, Lord Brahma is situated. On the right side, Sadashiva. But one should know that in the middle dwells Lord Vishnu. Therefore, one should not smear the middle portion. Yeah, so it's good to keep the middle portion clear. Okay, so Kanti Mala. One should always wear Kanti Mala. Sipping water. So this description, you have this article here about sipping water for purification. Then chanting Gayatri Mantra. Alright, there's a whole section about Brahman threads, etc. And also I've added a section on how to replace the Brahman thread. Okay. And that's all the basic sort of growth steps we go through in the morning about preparing ourselves for deity worship. There's a lot more detail you can get into. And of course, then, you know, this is all the stuff you do at home preparing. Then when you go to the temple, you start to do all, you know, a whole range of other things in preparing ourselves for worship. And, you know, with gathering all the paraphernalia and the items for worshipping the deity, cleansing the items, and et cetera like that. Then when you get on the altar, you go through more and more steps of purification. And then finally, with the worship is broken in different stages, and there's the worship of the main deity, which is technically called Ija. And then before that is what is called Yoga. And before that is Abhigamana and Upadana. Abhigamana is the stuff at home, we prepare at home. Upadana is all the gathering all the items. Then in this section called Yoga, this is all the, you know, like preliminary worship of Guru and Lord Chaitanya, you know, if we're talking about worship of Radha Krishna. And before that you would do what is called Vrutashuddhi. So these are different mantras we chant with the idea of removing this final impurity. What's the final impurity? We've cleansed ourselves, we've got clean cloth on, we've put tilak on, we've done all these different things. What would the final impurity be?
And we start purification with the body?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we're chanting when we chant these verses. I am by nature the eternal servant of Krishna, but I've been inimical toward him from time immemorial. But due to my spiritual master's mercy, I now understand that I'm Krishna's eternal servant. So that this, you know, but on the altar we're trying to, at least while we're there, try to understand, I'm Krishna's servant. I'm nothing more than Krishna's servant. You know, I'm not this, I'm not that. And that's why, you know, I really, you know, strongly encourage devotees, you know, like on many altars I visit, a lot of talking, you know. It's just not at all necessary on an altar, you know. Because when you're talking, what are you doing?
I'm not meditating.
You're not focusing on the person in front of you. And who's that person in front of you?
Krishna.
Krishna. Yeah? If we're talking to someone else, it means we're focusing on that other person. Mm-hmm. Yeah? You know, point is, no conversations on the altar. You know, simple things like, oh, can I have some pins? That's okay. That's just practical because that's related directly to the service. But then when we start getting the conversations about, oh, I like Jagannath when he's dressed like that, oh, I do that in the pujari room. That's not necessary on the altar. You know, it's really not necessary, and it's disrespectful to the deities. You know, it's just like, you know, if we were sitting in front of Srila Prabhupada, would we start to have such conversations? Would we start talking about, you know, how we like this thing or that thing or whatever it is we want to do for Srila Prabhupada? I don't think so. So, you know, it's a very important part, is to identify ourselves that I'm not this body, I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. And we help to reinforce that identification by staying focused upon the deity, by staying focused upon the service. It's very important to stay, you know, completely focused upon the service. Okay? Any questions at all? I'll leave you with an interesting quote. There's a letter that Prabhupada wrote where he talks about Achan City. Anyone who has a database can look this letter up. And Prabhupada is saying in this letter, this is just like a taster for you all to get you inspired to do more and more deity worship. In this letter, Prabhupada is describing what Achan City means. He said, Achan City means that through the process of deity worship, you achieve perfection. And he said, for one who achieves Achan City, at the end of this life, they have to go directly back to the spiritual world. So we understand that through other processes, you know, we perfect ourselves, and what happens is we go somewhere in this universe where the Lord's performing his pastimes, and then get further trained in the culture of how to be a Vaishnava, you know, how to serve Krishna, and go directly back to the spiritual world. But if we perfect ourselves in deity worship, we go back to the spiritual world straight away. Because if you perfect yourself in deity worship, you taken up the culture. Because deity worship is a practical application of the culture of Vaishnavism. It's a practical application of the culture that is being enacted in the spiritual world. And you see, all the 16 items of deity worship, there's an interesting book by Krishnadas Kaviraj, I believe it's called the Govinda Lilamrita. I have not read it myself. It's a bit too elevated for me, but I've heard some parts of it from Janani Vasprabhu. And it describes how the residents and the forests of Vrindavan are worshipping Krishna. So when you go through all the different 16 items of worship, Krishna's Kaviraj is describing how, you know, like certain residents of Vrindavan are offering Krishna a seat, then other residents of Vrindavan are welcoming Krishna, and other, you know, like it might be the plants or the animals or whatever, are bathing his feet. Yeah? And even talks about how the Champak, you know what this Champak plant looks like?
Sanjukhan.
No, it's something different. They call it, the Champak's actually, you know, quite... If you look on the back of the original Krishna book, the big one with the silver, I think Prabhupada's holding a Champak plant on the back of that. And they've got a scent that looks like a flame. Yeah? Who's seen that? Most of those from India must have seen Champak, yeah? Beautiful. It's such a smell. Such a smell, man. Anyhow, it's describing how the wind's blowing the champak tree, and the flowers are like this, and they're offering like a lamp to Krishna. And the whole description is going, describing all the 16 items of worship. And this is a rasika literature. It's not like this is like, you know, a Vaidic literature. It's a rasika literature. And it's describing the 16 items of worship. So, even though we're worshipping on the stage of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, it doesn't mean that we give up this activity when we go to the spiritual realm. We're being trained through the process of deity worship to return to the spiritual realm. So this is a very real, tangible way of becoming spiritually perfect and going back to the spiritual realm. if we learn the system properly. Okay?
How often should you wash your hair if you're wearing long hair?
According to Madhusangita, after menstrual flow ceases, it's required, otherwise not. I know most women do it more, but it's not required. For menstrual problems, you're not supposed to have hair. But ladies, I know some ladies wash it more because they just can't stand it being any, you know, it just feels too dirty. Indian ladies, they tend to oil their hair, and that, believe it or not, is purification. Prabhupada mentions how rubbing oil on the body is cleansing. Of course, you have to wash the oil off. But, in the Shastra it says, after menstrual flow ceases, it should be done. But then if you feel the need to do it more often, then do it more often. Okay, we're done. So tomorrow, 1 o'clock, yeah, because it's a Bhakti Shastri tomorrow. And we're going to cover 3 things tomorrow: bhoga offering, and I'll give a demonstration of how to offer bhoga according to the system that's followed here, arti. And the third one, I'm thinking we'll talk about paraphernalia care. Is that okay with you, Buck? You want to participate in that one?
It's okay with what?
If you participate in paraphernalia care. I want to see the Krishna things looked after nicely. Very important. Actually, it's interesting. I think the calculation was done just recently about the amount of outfits that are here and how much they cost. About $2,000 a set, right, for all the deities?
Nice.
Yeah, probably.
For a day set.
If you take the
menus,
the average costing
for
the
day. Yeah. And there's 70 day sets.
About 50
day sets. So you're looking at somewhere in the region of about $140,000 worth of clothes sitting in there. Not to mention all the jewellery and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a huge investment by lots and lots and lots of devotees over many, many years sitting in that room there. So we need to learn how to take care of it properly. Okay, thank you all so much for your time. Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivedanta ki, Shri Shri Radha Bhava ki.